Meeting. Please stand by. We're going on air in 5, 4, 3, 2.
Good morning, everyone. If you have joined us today, we are going to have a little finance and economic resiliency committee. The last one under my chair leadership. And we'll talk about that a little bit more when we finish. But Rafael, will you let everybody know how they could join electronically if they're listening?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, everyone. So today's meeting of the Finance and Economic Resiliency Committee has been scheduled in a hybrid format, with the committee physically present and remaining staff and members of the public appearing either in person or virtually by Zoom. In order to participate in today's meeting virtually, members of the public may dial 1-888-475-4499 and enter the webinar ID, which is 863-6059-5462#. Or you may log into the Zoom app and enter the webinar ID, which again is 863-6059-5462. Any individual wishing to speak on an item must click the raise hand icon if they are using the Zoom app, or dial *9 if you're participating by phone.
Thank you, Rafael. And Jason, I think you've got some announcements, a few withdrawals perhaps, and we've got a few time certains, I think. Go ahead.
Yes, thank you, Chair. Just announcing that item 2 is withdrawn. Item 10 is withdrawn, and item 18, which was originally listed as a future item, has been requested by the sponsor to be moved forward to today's meeting on the Black Film Festival FY25-26 funding, and that will have a time certain of 10 a.m. And number 6 will have a 10:30 time certain. Also announcing that the December FERC will be canceled for now, as it had been tentatively scheduled to be here, but during our Basel week. So as of right now, we'll be canceling that. Thank you.
Yeah, and then thank you very much, Jason. And then the leadership of the new commission will set the committees and so forth. So regarding 18, I know there was a request to hear it. It was originally referred in September, scheduled in November, but then we're not going to have a November meeting. It is the prerogative of the chair to move it to be heard, and I'm doing that because if we don't hear it today, it probably won't be heard until maybe January. So I am moving that up as well, and I have let Commissioner Dominguez know that we will entertain that at 10 a.m. So, and with that, let's go ahead and get started. Gentlemen, I don't know if you have anything that is of urgency. If not, I'll just call up item 1 on the Stormwater Master Plan. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Joe Gomez, Public Works Director. With me today, I'm being joined by Christina Ortega, our city engineer, and our project manager from AECOM, Eric Alcantara. All right, so if you can just go real quick, and we'll try to be brief, Mr. Chair, because I know you like brevity. Very quickly, next. So we're going to talk a little bit about the project purpose, the tasks associated with the Stormwater Master Plan, the neighborhood improvement projects, how they fit into the Stormwater Master Plan, the proposed stormwater infrastructure summary, water quality approach, critical needs. We've identified some critical needs, and then we'll entertain your questions. So with that, I'm going to turn over the floor for a few minutes to Christina, and then I'll close it out.
Thank you. You're recognized.
Good morning. So this project was intended to update our stormwater master plan for the city with a 50-year planning horizon, but really focus on the first 10 years. And as Joe mentioned, identifying those critical needs. We also incorporated recent studies and updated our water quality approach, which is very important to our city. We've updated our stormwater hydraulic model and our cost estimates for the construction of all these projects. And at the end of it, came up with a prioritized capital improvement plan. It's been a year-long process. We started in October of 2022, conducted data collection and analysis of that data, looking at LIDAR elevation for the city, the resident complaints, all of those recent studies, which we'll show you in a second, came up with a criteria to prioritize critical needs in the city, still really focusing on our approach of the neighborhood improvement projects, and looked at public and stakeholder engagement. So our consultant AECOM put all that information together into a tech memorandum that summarized all the information and the analysis, and they came up with that prioritized capital improvement plan. All of this information was presented to the public in a meeting that we held in September 28th. It was a hybrid meeting. We had good attendance in person, but also via Zoom. We had our consultant and city staff there present to have one-on-one conversations with our residents to really get into their concerns. Everybody's concerned about what's going to happen in front of, you know, in my area. And with that, we're here today to present the results of the study to you and hope to continue on to full commission to have the updated stormwater master plan adopted and approved. Just a list up on the screen of those previous studies that were incorporated into the master plan, looking at the road racing strategy, the neighborhood prioritization, implementation of blue-green stormwater infrastructure, and you can see all the others. And of mention, sea level rise vulnerability assessment and adaptation plan is currently ongoing and in close coordination with this effort. As I mentioned previously, our city's approach is really to continue implementing neighborhood improvement projects, and these are those that fully address the infrastructure within a neighborhood, looking at those large stormwater pipes, robust pump stations, road racing, water and wastewater infrastructure improvements, roadway improvements, and above-ground components. And this is really the only feasible solution to long-term adapt to sea level rise and deal with the more frequent, stronger storms. And we continue with the 2020 adopted list of prioritized neighborhoods. As you can see up on the screen, the city is currently working hard to execute and implement a number of these. And we're getting to the tail end of Indian Creek with the seawall substantially complete, the road racing and storm pump station already completed, and now we're doing the landscape improvements. We're about to break ground on West Avenue, the FDOT Alton Road project, which is also finalizing design currently, and we're designing First Street and South Point stormwater improvements, and North Shore D and Town Center. So all of these projects look at designing to accommodate, to deal with a 10-year, 24-hour storm, looking at a roadway design life expectancy of 30 years and beyond, and that sea level rise projection per NOAA's intermediate high. And with that, Joe's going to continue.
Part of the stormwater master plan, obviously, to go through the model was to update the hydraulic model and then determine what the needs are for the future. Like Christina said, in looking at the overall 50-year horizon. So the conclusion is we're probably going to need 60 stormwater pump stations in addition to the ones that we already have. So 60 stormwater pump stations, including the best management practices related to water quality, and we'll talk about that in a minute, what we call water quality treatment trains. About 104 miles of stormwater pipes and forest main that will be necessary. And based on all this, all in with all the improvements associated, water, sewer, above ground components, the estimate in today's dollars for to be able to carry out this master plan is approximately $3.7 billion. Water quality treatment approach. So we looked at this from a very holistic a point of view. In the past, and a lot of our systems are tied to injection wells. The model that we're using going forward is a little more sophisticated and will provide a higher level of treatment. So we'll use the bar racks to take care of the heavy solids, then the vortex, and in addition to that, we're going to have a fine treatment system to be able to take care of a lot of the particles that would are of interest to maintain the health of Biscayne Bay. That would be then fed into the pump station, and then through the pump station will be pumped out through an outfall using energy dissipators to slow down the water that comes out of the pump station. So in terms of critical needs, so what do we define as critical needs? So those are projects that are adaptable, that are going to be part of the overall neighborhood improvement program, but will provide a level of relief for flooding, nuisance flooding, that people are facing every day in the city. So, for example, and it's complementary and adaptable to the NIP program, so it's not throwaway. Nothing that we're proposing here is going to be throwaway. So as an example, you see that's a Nautilus neighborhood, a B. And in there, the most critical area, the lowest lying area, is the area around Musk Park, which is one of the projects that's highly ranked in our projects. The toolbox, we have everything from regrading of roads, slightly elevating roads. So we're not going to be doing wholesale road raising as opposed to just being able to raise low points to be able to accommodate our drainage. Connecting drainage areas. Through the use of boxes, inlets, also water quality, very important, enhancing existing outfalls and things like that. So this is what we call our drainage toolbox critical needs. And in terms of the criteria, so we spent a lot of time developing how are we going to assess these improvements and how they're going to work in relationship to the overall neighborhood improvement program. So, for example, areas that historically are very low, that have temporary pumps, those will be ranked very high because they are being inundated constantly by flooding. Flooding complaints, the consultant did a holistic review of all the flooding complaints that are recorded to our control room and things like that. So as you can see, the weighting criteria goes from 7 down to 1. And then as a result of that, what you see here is the ranking of critical needs, and then the project rank in terms of the neighborhood improvement program. So what we're saying is those critical needs are projects that are going to be in the NIP program 20, 30 years out because of the way they're ranked. So, for example, you have Nautilus F is ranked number 1, and that's at a cost of $2.6 million. So we ranked the top 20 for a total cost of $64 million. Here's the schedule. Christina, if you would like to run through the schedule.
Sure. I think the main takeaway, as I mentioned earlier, is we're currently working on a number of neighborhood improvement projects, and those are the ones that you see up top. And we plan to continue implementing those. As you know, those are large areas, higher costs, and they take longer. What we propose is to continue doing that, again, as the primary sustainable solution for our city, but in parallel to implement these smaller pinpointed locations that are suffering today due to both rainfall and tidal inundation. So as you see here, up top you see the NIPs, in the lower half you'd see the 20 critical needs projects, starting design of a couple of those per year, and you can see that we would, over the course of 10 years, implement those as proposed.
So let me ask. I know we're scheduled to start on West Avenue. Is the city still looking for funding opportunities through grants with some of these other projects?
Absolutely. very aggressively we pursue all available grants.
And is there any action item that you need from this committee? Do you want to send this to the commission?
We would like to present this to the full commission, full so commission. We would like your favorable recommendation to move forward.
Commissioner Ariola, this is your item, so I don't know if you are you okay with sending it to the commission to get a hearing on it?
The reason I've kept this on is just it's essential that we address the needs that the city has, and you know the pause of the last 6 years I don't think has made our city more resilient. I think it's gotten us electeds and a lot of the various folks in our community, the different neighborhood associations, they've learned how to stall projects, whether it's using the Inspector General as a tool or calling for more studies, and we just spend endless amounts of money on consultants and waste a lot of staff time when we know we're not even going to make a decision. And it disgusts me that this happened, and I fear that it's going to continue happening. Every single person running lists, besides public safety, resiliency as one of their core platforms. To my knowledge, none of them actually speak on how they're going to do it. So these tend to be platitudes that politicians run on, but we've done nothing in 6 years. The pause was a major catastrophe for our city. If I'm not mistaken, Joe, when I first was elected and we were doing resiliency projects, to my recollection, the projected cost was, well over $1 billion, but it wasn't $3.7 billion. So, I think that's reflective of inflation and things like that. Had we not squandered 6 years, we would have been much further down the road in making our neighborhoods resilient at a much lower cost. But because of the delay and what's happened with inflation, you have this astronomical number of 3.7. I don't suspect that's going to go down in the future. So delays just means, more costs in the future. I wanted to have this to say my parting words on the subject. And so I'll leave it to a future commission to do something about it.
So it, is it okay?
Yes.
Will you move it? That will. All right. So let's and I'll second it. We'll move to the commission. Yes. I don't know that there's any benefit of moving it for this one. So I would just plan on moving it for the January meeting.
Yes, sir.
Okay. And Commissioner Fernandez.
And just a question. Just looking at a specific project here. In North Beach, we've been having recurring water quality issues, especially around the Parkview Island area. And then I see here in the list of projects, there's 20 projects. The first one in North Beach is not till rank number 9, and it's specifically the North Shore B&C project in the Dickens Avenue area, which seems to be kind of abutting or in very close proximity to the area where we've been having water quality and recurring issues with bacteria and other stuff with the water there. Of course, we have the project with UM where they're coming to us, and we have budgeted infrastructure improvements and all that.
That's correct.
But I'm just wondering.
Is there
anything here that is tied potentially to the recurring water quality issues, and perhaps maybe that merits moving it up in the rank? Have you considered that? I don't want to get in the way of staff recommendation, but please give me your feedback.
I would say, number one, we are working on the design of North Shore D North Beach Town Center, and that is to address all of the infrastructure within that area. But beyond that, and it's not included here because these projects are already underway in design. One is to design water quality improvements to outfalls that discharge in this area that will not be impacted by the town center NIP. And beyond that, we're also investing heavily in inspecting and upgrading our water and sewer, particularly our sanitary sewer infrastructure in the area. So there's a lot of investment that's already underway
But I guess when I when you considered the ranking of these projects, how critical they are, it seems to me that it's probably here based on flooding. That probably the most is ranked based on by the amount of time it takes for the water to drain, I would imagine. Is that correct?
Yes.
That is correct.
So did you consider in your ranking, perhaps, besides how much time it takes for the water to drain, well, how about water quality issues and perhaps the yield and the improvement to the water quality in an area like the Parkview Canal, would it yield the need to perhaps move it up in the ranking?
And perhaps is misleading in the fact that these water quality focused projects are not listed together.
Uh-huh.
In these, the 20 critical needs are focused on flooding specifically,
okay,
where we have a number of projects that are underway, which are not listed here but are part of our capital improvement plan, that are dedicated specifically to deal with water quality. And the Parkview area is an example.
That obviously, as you know, we have $200,000 for the design and then $2 million that will be for the construction of those water quality treatment systems in the Parkview area.
I'm going to support moving this forward. I have concern that there are other jurisdictions above us, whose policies we're going to have to comply with, that are considering laws that if they are implemented, could substantially increase the cost of our projects, if not bring some of these projects to a halt altogether, including having to do with water retention.
Yes.
And if any of these ordinances or laws from the higher jurisdictions pass before we can shovel in the ground, we're going to jeopardize progress on our storm water master plan. And which means just jeopardizing the future of the economy and the progress of the city. So I support your motion and your second.
So, and I think also there will be action from higher federal and state. I am hopeful that we'll see some money from them as well that will help this, because there's no way that local governments can pay this. Let me ask on the town center, where are we at? Because we got a grant for that, right?
Yes, sir. We did. $10 million grant.
That design work is...
It's ongoing right now.
Yeah,
so right now we're in the basis of design report. That's scheduled to be completed by February of 2024. And then from that, we'll go right into the design and then to construction. So we're moving ahead.
Okay, great. All right, so Jason, do you have what you need?
Yes, I'm going to show the Public Works presented the Stormwater Master Plan, and the FERC unanimously agreed to send this back to commission with a favorable recommendation.
Favorable to be heard at the commission.
Yes.
At the January meeting.
Is the request when it goes to commission an adoption of the master plan? So a favorable recommendation to adopt it.
Exactly.
Okay.
And then we can show this item completed here in the committee. And then, so with that, let me call up 18. Thank you so much, 18, on the American Black Film Festival. Is Commissioner Dominguez online?
Yes.
Can you bring her in and we'll welcome her? Good morning, Commissioner Dominguez. Can you hear us?
Yes, I can. Can you hear me?
Yes, we got you here. Good morning. So we got this scheduled because in the interest of time, this should not wait till January. So why don't you tee it up and tell us your dream?
The ABFF has been around for about 27 years. It's been on the beach for the past, this would be the 16th year. What they requested was to have a three-year commitment where we would help with $200,000 allocated to them. We really want to keep this festival on Miami Beach. It is fabulous. I've gone to it before. I went to it this past year with Mayor Gelber. It has a wonderful economic impact, and it's bringing Black professionals in the creative and film industry. In the past, the mayor has said that it's an anchor event, similar to what we have with Wine and Food Fest and some of the other annual events that we have. And given that the state has sometimes brought forth unwelcoming laws, by accepting this, I think it will continue to show that Miami Beach is a welcome place for everybody. And having the ABFF with us with a 3-year commitment is very important.
Okay, good. Let me go to staff. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Francis Vallecillo, Assistant Director of Tourism and Culture. Good morning.
Thank you. And for the current fiscal year, I think it's funded at 200, right?
Sure. So if I may, to give a little bit of background, and for fiscal year 2022, the approval was for 200,000. Now, it must be noted that that was for two events in the same fiscal year. In November of 2021, they held a virtual festival. And in June, they had another festival that was in person. We were coming out of COVID, so they first did a virtual to come back. In fiscal year 2023, the sponsorship was for $171,000, and that went through the sponsorship process that is administered by our department. For this coming fiscal year, they went through the sponsorship process again, and they were awarded $103,000. And then addition to that, the commission approved an additional $97,000 to be included in the budget for a total of $200,000 for the coming fiscal year.
Okay. And I think the request is just to have a firm commitment of $200,000 because this is becoming an anchor event in our city, and they don't want to have to go through the process and change their budget every year. So, Commissioner Riola, is
that? It would be a 3-year commitment, so we can reevaluate it after 3 years if it's something that the city feels that they want to have a change. But I think it's really important to give them the commitment for the next 3 years.
Yep, and I think every project now after 3 years has to be reevaluated because we decided that some of these projects were going on forever. So so I'm fully supportive of this. If my colleagues will, one of you will move it.
I'll move it, yep.
Okay, then I'm going to second that, and then what we'll do, Commissioner Fernandez, are you okay with this?
I think it's great.
Okay, so it's unanimous. Let's send this. I know we kind of put you on the spot because I moved it up and you don't have a memo. We can do an after action.
Sure.
Let's send it to the commission on the 25th of this month and just put it on consent. And if anyone, my colleagues want to pull it, they'll pull it. But you have what you need?
Yes,
thank you.
Jason, do you have what you need?
Yes, thank you.
Commissioner Dominguez, you have what you need?
Yes, this is amazing. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Have a great day. All right, thank you so much. We'll close this item now. So, Jason, you can show that item closed, okay?
Yep.
Now, I want to call up Deputy City Manager. I think you and your staff are on item 5. This is really important that we get through this today because we need to send this to Commission. So what we remember at the last meeting, Commissioner Riola, you and I discussed that we would discuss the permitting process, the consultant's report, and they would brief us on their actions that are taken. So, and then hopefully we'll send this over to the commission as well. So, Eric, with that, let me recognize you and anyone from the city that you'd like to help you with this. I understand that we had a consultant that gave us recommendations on permitting, and you are working on action items relating to those recommendations. And with that, I will recognize you. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Chair, Vice Chair, members of the committee. Eric Carpenter, Deputy City Manager. Just wanted to let you know that this is the culmination of about almost a year's worth of work that we've put into trying to help improve the development review process all the way from initial concept and land use board approval all the way through CO and CU of the properties. We did hire a consultant to come in and look at the entire process, soup to nuts. We also put together a team of individuals, including myself from the manager's office and the department heads of all of the different departments that do touch that process. The report that was presented at, or was not presented, but was included in the agenda for last commission meeting, the September commission meeting, was a lengthy report, a deep dive, but it was consolidated basically down into 14 individual points And those 14 points are summarized in the chart that was included in this particular agenda. Our group has really tackled that in five different fields or groupings. Governance, where we've put together a policy working group that includes myself and all of the department heads. We've been meeting on a biweekly basis for the last 6 months. And a change control advisory group, which is the subject matter experts from each of those departments that works with the EnerGov program to make sure that we are streamlining and maximizing our use of EnerGov. Training. We're improving our training program.
Eric, do you have a slide on the 14 points, or are they in the book somewhere?
They're actually...
Oh, I see, in the supplement.
Yes.
Yeah. Got it. I'm sorry, I interrupted. Go ahead.
No. Training, which is something that we need to do both internally and externally. We're doing weekly training for our intake staff to make sure that the folks that are the front line, the first interaction with the customers, are technologically proficient to be able to take that information and help them get to the right place, process it properly. The third bucket is technology, where we've already implemented a new landing page that includes all of the information that folks need for different types of permitting that are handled throughout the city, whether it be building permits or certificate of use permits, special event permits, even their annual fire inspections. We've also, as you approved last month at the commission, started the implementation of a decision tree. This was recommended to us by the consultant. It was to mirror something that was done in Boulder, Colorado, and is an interactive web application that allows folks to go in and walk through what they're looking to accomplish to help them get pointed in the right direction to what they need to submit and to whom. Beyond that, we're also looking to expand technology such as Bluebeam, which is a permitting, basically comment on the drawings itself technology that will help folks make sure that they address comments that they get back from us and submit them in a timely fashion so that we can get things out after a first or second review rather than having it take three or four or five. Also, next bucket, customer service. As you approved in this year's budget, the customer liaison position, we have put together the project or the job description, and that should be out on the street shortly. We're also highlighting the checklists that have been formed for the over 175 different permitting processes that we handle, and we're also creating some automated processes for folks that have to deal with outside agencies like the county, making sure that they understand what they need to be doing with those outside agencies. And finally, process improvements. We're addressing any remaining manual processes that exist in our system. We're removing unnecessary reviews or inspections. We're reviewing the workflow and modifying it as appropriate. We're updating the checklists, and we're expanding drop-down menus for standardizing our comments that are given out as a result of plan reviews. So that's a lot of information. I tried to distill it down as much as possible, but certainly I and the team are here to answer any questions that you may have, and if you'd like, you know, we can walk through things one by one.
So again, this is in the supplement. So you've got 14 items, and then on the far right corner, the status, I guess these are the actions you're taking, right?
Correct.
So when the consultant, when they completed their review, Did you all go back and forth in terms of action items, or are you all in sync? Are there any areas where the consultant has a different idea from what we're doing in terms of the improvement process?
I mean, for the most part, I think we're somewhat in agreement with a lot of the things that the consultant said. There are some things, you know, that the consultant may have slightly missed the mark. We went back and forth with them a little bit. You know, we do have item 7, for example. You know, the land use board review process is long. We agree, but I don't know that that's through any action of the administration. I think that it's really set up that way to put checks and balances into place so that everyone who could be impacted by the process is brought to the table. And so we're not sure that there's much to do there as far as, you know, cutting out steps of that process to make it shorter. We do, you know, agree there might be an opportunity to incorporate a consent agenda on some of those boards, but obviously we want to be careful about that because, you know, we want to give everybody their opportunity to have their day in court, so to speak.
Okay. So I want to turn this over and see if my colleagues have questions or comments, but the goal is that we want to send this to the commission. It can even be on consent, just so that everybody, all of the electeds, know that this is the results of the consultant's analysis, and these are the action items that the city is taking to improve the process. But with that, Commissioner Ayala?
Yeah, well, first of all, thanks, Eric, and the team. Thanks, Eric, and the team for indulging me on this and going through these efforts. You know, I think it's just something that we need to keep front and center, and I don't know, you know, if there's someone on your team that you want to identify as just constantly working with, you know, our technology partners and all the user groups, whether they're internal or external, just to constantly trying to make this as user-friendly as possible so that we can be, you know, the most user-friendly city, you know, in Dade County, if not the whole state. You know, I do think this should be, you know, one of your department's priorities, just to constantly, you know, be using technology for ease of use, for working with government. You know, it shouldn't be driven by commissioners who receive complaints from users. This should just be something that, you know, you do as a matter of course in your daily tasks.
Agreed.
Fernandez.
Thank you. Yeah, I 100% support moving these recommendations forward. I think I sponsored the contract with Barry Dunn because we've all received a number of complaints about how slow the process moves in our building department. One of the things I'm most, you know, proud to see is not only are we consolidating the website, because sometimes a website can be very difficult to follow, but also the training for the intake staff. That is so essential, so that people don't have to be speaking to, you know, 10 different people before getting a clear answer on how to proceed. So I've been briefed on these recommendations a number of times. I think we just need to get out of the way as politicians and let our professional staff implement these recommendations to make the process more efficient.
Thank you. And also remember, we added, forget what title we gave them, a person to an ombudsman.
Ombudsman.
Yeah, that I think is going to be implemented starting October 1st or whenever.
And that's the position that I refer to as the customer liaison.
Perfect, perfect. So let's show this unanimous then, the three of us, to move this report back to The meeting on the 18th, I'd put an item on the agenda just as a placeholder in case we were able to get this done here. And then we'll either do that or I'll move it to consent so that we can accept the 14 items and your response and your action items on those 14. So, and then I need to ask Commissioner Riolo, what this is your item. It's kind of a bigger item, the Tyler. Do we want to close this out at this point, or do you want to leave it here and see if one of our existing or new colleagues might want to pick it up?
Well, I would recommend that somebody pick it up and you look at it every 6 months, a check-in, you know, and then I'm not sure, Eric, if when we do our annual, you know, resident survey, is this one of the categories that we pull to see what satisfaction is with you know, our website and usability?
I don't believe so.
And if not, think about including it, because that way you can have real data, not just from residents, but, you know, businesses and, you know, folks that have to pull permits just to, you know, or do anything with the city for that matter. Include that in one of the resident questions so that we can get some real data.
Okay. Good idea.
So, yeah, I mean, I don't know if somebody wants to
do you
look
want
at this.
To,
well, this needs to go to the City Commission for an update. I remember when we approved the contract that it was – we approved the contract. It had to come back to the City Commission within 120 days for an update to the City Commission. So this is going now to the full commission.
Correct. This item needs to go back – this particular item regarding the permit – process review.
Yeah, so this is sort of what we
with our recommendation
is a subset of the bigger Tyler, right?
Can I offer an amendment to your motion?
Go ahead.
So let's send this to the City Commission with a recommendation that we get an update every 6 months. That way it's embedded in the process that every 6 months we...
I think you may want to keep it here in finance to do that update and then individually... Okay. Send things to the commission if you want, but
we could do that. Yeah.
Otherwise, yeah, we'll withdraw it, and then someone is going to do a referral and send it back here. And so,
yeah.
So if you'd like to take it, just
yeah,
if you want to take
that.
It, and then every 6 months we'll get an update, and there'll be pieces of this, just like the one we did today, that then we'll want to send to the commission.
Let's do it every 4 months.
Okay.
Let's
every
do it every four
months.
Months.
Yeah. So, Jason, we'll change the sponsor on this to Commissioner Fernandez, and then we will hear this again in finance, say, February.
Yep.
Okay.
So, if I may, so we'll show that the administration presented the report on the permit processing improvement progress report, and that FERC unanimously approved sending this to commission with a favorable recommendation with the sponsor, and also the sponsor will be changed to Commissioner Fernandez and return in February for an update on the, and the update would be on the standard Tyler item.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
And there are going to be different pieces, and Commissioner Fernandez will be working with you to talk about which ones
that'll be
have
February.
A priority.
So we'll put on February. Okay.
Okay. All right. Great. Then. That's what we'll do on this. All right. Anything else you need? You got it? Okay. The next, I want to pull up my item 7. We ran out of time on this at the last meeting. This is on the roll-off permitting. And quite honestly, I have gone back and forth on this item and changed my mind several times. But who from staff, is there anyone from staff that can just... This happened because we had a few months ago situations where somebody was getting fines and penalties on things that looked like a roll-off but wasn't really a roll-off, and our ordinance is very clear, so I wanted to review that. So, and that's why I brought the item. Joe, it's my understanding that I know a roll-off is a roll-off is a roll-off, and we said that. I think our roll-off is, I think, about 10 cubic yards. Is that right?
10 cubic yards. They vary in size.
They do.
Yeah. But
containers.
Containers are typically 10 cubic.
But if it's a roll-off of any size, right. Is that – because, you know, the problem I have with this, and there's no right answer, is I don't want to create a situation where someone – calling someone to pick up a used refrigerator with a dump truck or a pickup truck is suddenly going to get hit with a fine. And so then I have gone back and forth on this. Because I'm also afraid that I'm going to create a situation of unintended consequences with having someone come up with something that looks like a roll-off. If I try to have something that expands the scope and then they come up with something that's 9 cubic yards just to get around it. Right. So, and so with that, I'm just going to withdraw the item, and then we'll let a future commission deal with this issue. Because if I were going to be here another 6 months, I might continue working on it. But let's show this item withdrawn, Jason. Thank you very much. I apologize if I've wasted anyone's time. Now, we had a 10:30 on the anchor on item 6. Is Amy? Amy, are you here? Come on up. And I think we've got a guest from the county, so...
We do. Good morning.
Good morning.
Commissioners.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Can you introduce yourself? Tell us who you are.
Yes, I'm McKee Gray, Chief of the Natural Resources Division of the Miami-Dade County's Durham.
Welcome to Miami Beach.
Thank you.
Amy, I'll turn it over to you. Tell us what's going on.
Sure. Well, good morning. So today we are coming back to FERC to talk about the status of the county's planning and studies to work with cities to establish anchor limitation areas within their boundaries. This is something that would be supportive of the mooring fields, which is something that this committee and the commission has, funded the design and planning, and we're moving forward with the staff. So in a complementary way, we are pursuing these ALAs. We do have a resolution directing, staff to make sure we have ALAs in certain areas of the cities, and there's two paths for that. One path being amending the state statute, and another path being a county-directed ALA. They're both a little bit different, which I had reviewed last time, but McGee was going to review where the county is within their study.
Thank you. So the county has completed our study on the establishment of anchoring limitation areas throughout Miami-Dade County. The report is in the final process of being prepared to go before the Board of County Commissioners, and that should be occurring in the next couple of months based on scheduling. We are proposing several areas throughout the county as general areas in which an anchoring limitation area could be established, but municipalities are welcome to propose their own areas for the county to then take forth to the Florida Fish and Wildlife Commission.
Go ahead, Commissioner.
And to your last point there, Have we done that already? We've presented our plan to the county.
We have, Commissioner. We've had approximately 3 meetings on the areas of concern to our residents, and we've also forwarded the resolution that you sponsored in June to the staff over there, so they're aware.
And that's what you're referring to. That's what they're going to be voting on soon.
They would be voting to accept or deny our report, and then provide staff with recommendations as how to proceed.
So we should be lobbying our county commissioners to accept our recommendations.
So does your report and your analysis, is it going to have specific areas, or is it just going to be a framework?
It's general areas throughout the county in which we recommend ALAs could be established based on our knowledge of where derelict and at-risk vessels are currently being taken out by the county.
And are any of those areas that will be in your written report part of Miami Beach?
Yes.
Can you tell us which ones?
I'll give you a general feedback, as our commission has not yet seen this and accepted
okay.
it.
Mm-hmm.
But generally, southern parts of Miami Beach.
Southern parts of Miami Beach. Okay. And when is your written report going to be completed and submitted to the county commissioners?
So the report is completed. It's going through our internal review process and legal vetting, and then we'll be sending it for scheduling. And as soon as it is sent for scheduling, I can let Director Knowles know, and I'm sure she can pass that message along.
But do you anticipate that'll be in a month, 2 months, 3 months, 6 months, or when is the report going to be publicly available is what I'm asking?
That I cannot give you a definitive answer on, unfortunately. A lot of that will depend on the scheduling around the holidays as far as getting to a board agenda.
Okay. And Amy, did we send a written request to the county on the 3 areas?
We have. We forwarded the resolution that has the specific information. And one of the things that McKee and I did discuss is that the board, I think within your report, the board would allow cities to come forward to establish additional ALAs, and that would come from cities, and then, you know, county staff would forward that on to FWC. So even if the report is somewhat general in terms of areas, if we have more specific areas that we do in our resolution, if they're not included in that report, we would still have the ability to ask for those to be established working with county staff. So, for example, you know, ALAs can't be more than 100 acres in size. You know, we would have to define as staff, we would have to define the specific boundaries, as the county's report is very general. You know, we would have to have a plan for waterway markers. We would have to have a plan for enforcement. So these are some of the things we've discussed.
Yeah. And you mentioned that the request would have to go to Florida Fish and Wildlife. I did not understand that previously. I thought that the legislature gave authority to the county to adopt. So educate me on that a little bit more. So I guess the county does not have final authority?
So the county does have the ability to adopt by ordinance the establishment of anchoring limitation areas. However, the statute requires that the county provide 30 days notice to Florida Fish and Wildlife for a public notice regarding the establishment of that ALA.
And then what's the purpose of that? Does Fish and Wildlife, are they going to take action on that, or they could block it, or they could, what could they do?
My understanding is it's a public hearing to receive feedback from the public regarding the establishment of that ALA. This is a fairly new process, and I believe only one or two counties have gone through the process yet, and FWC has recommended approval and adopted those established ALAs for those counties.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah, it's interesting,
well,
right?
Yeah, yeah, we've been very clear that, you know, we're working on our project here in Miami Beach. Yeah, pull those down a little bit. But, you know, we've been very clear that we're not going to move forward until this issue is resolved in terms of, you know, establishing in this, because it's critically important that we address this issue. So I just hope that the county is not going to take 6 months or a year to finalize their report and get caught up in some bureaucratic delay.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. It sounds like the county report, or the county vote is actually even more critical than what the state legislature may or may not do.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, I was always in the assumption that this was something that the legislature was going to have to bless, but it sounds like the county really is the key. So we got to...
Well, I think the legislature gave the county the authority to do this, and then the county's trying to figure out how they want to implement it, right? And then I guess the county could even decide that they don't want to deal with it at all, which I hope won't be the case. But you're presenting your report recommendations. It'll eventually go to the 13 county commissioners, and they will either vote yes or no to implement it, right?
That is correct.
Mr. Chair, just a question.
Please, you recognize.
So DERM completed the report that was mandated by resolution of the county commission.
Correct.
And so you guys completed that, so you just passed it along to your boss, which is the mayor, and to the county attorneys for their review.
Correct. That's the, okay. The process that we go through.
All right. And then once that gets signed off by the county attorney and by the mayor, then it just goes to the county commission for placement on the agenda.
Correct.
Okay. So it's just following the process over at the county. So hopefully soon we should see this. So sometimes the county attorney's office takes a little bit long.
Yeah. So what would you like to do with this? Because we kept it here to get rid of it. But really the next step is, I don't know if there's any action that we can take here. The next step is to wait for the county. So I don't know, Commissioner, if you want
to... Yeah, I mean, just a recommendation. You're more of a county expert than I am. But, you know, Amy, as soon as you know that this is on the county agenda, and obviously hopefully you're both working together in a favorable light to, you know, include us in the ALAs, alert us, Amy, so that we can start making calls to our friends at the county, as well as our lobbyists, and then hopefully we can get a favorable ruling on this.
I just have a question on what DERM is drafted, and I know it's not finalized, it's just a draft, and I don't want to put you on the spot, but when we say the southern part of Miami Beach, that's kind of general. Amy, have you seen the draft document or no?
No, I have not.
You have not. Okay.
You can't tell us more specifically than the southern part of Miami Beach.
It's generally speaking the area in which Durham has removed the most derelict vessels.
Okay.
So that's what we were looking at as the priorities for the establishment of these ALAs.
Okay. All right.
Sounds like it's the area we're most concerned
about.
We'll wait.
Yeah.
So what about we do this, guys? What about if we direct the administration to advise the full commission once the report has been released? You're tracking that anyway, right, Amy?
Yes.
So we could close the item here, and then we'll direct the administration to notify the commission formally through some action on a commission meeting once the report's out, and include the report in a commission item. Okay?
How about an LTC? How about we have
I love that. You'll direct them to write an LTC. Good, great idea. Okay? And that way we can show this item closed in finance, which I know, Jason, will bring a smile on your face because you're keeping a tab on how many are open. And I thank you both, and I thank you for traveling across the bridge this morning to come and visit with us. Thank you so much.
Thank you all for having me.
Thank you. Okay, great. I want to make sure we get to item 11 on the artwork. Who's going to handle that from the city staff? Item 11. Good morning again.
So again, Francis Vaisio, Assistant Director of Tourism and Culture, and I'm joined by our Cultural Affairs Manager, Brandy Reddick. Today, we're here to discuss the possible acquisition of artwork by the artist Kevin Arrow. This has been a topic of discussion for a couple of months. The original memo to restore the artwork was approved by the City Commission in February of this year. In May, at the Public Safety and Neighborhood Quality of Life Committee, staff was directed to work with the artist to discuss possible artwork, new artwork. So Brandy can give more into everything that has gone on, all the discussions over the last couple of months, and now we have a proposal for new artwork for $25,000.
Good morning, Brandy. Give us a little bit of history of why we're here. I know this has involved a piece of artwork in North Beach, right? Go ahead. You're recognized.
Absolutely. Thank you. Artist.
Get a little bit closer to the microphone or pull it.
Sure. Thanks. Is that better?
Yeah, thanks.
Sure. In 2014, artist Kevin Arrow completed the Beatles Mandala, which is in Banshell Park in North Beach. By 2015, the work had begun to deteriorate. Over the years, Art in Public Places has attempted to restore the work. We've invested about $55,000 in the restoration of that work. And unfortunately, the concrete slab the work was based on was poured incorrectly, and the work could not be salvaged. So on September the 13th, the City Commission accepted the Art in Public Places recommendation to deaccession the artwork. Separately from that, Commissioner Kristen Rosen-Gonzalez has proposed a purchase of artwork from the same artist. We've conducted studio visits with the artist, and what he has proposed is a recreation of the Beatles mandala in a painted work on board that would be 12 feet by 12 feet, and that is for the amount of $25,000.
And Mr. Chair, if it is approved and we move forward today, we would need to identify funding for the $25,000, and then it would be presented to Art in Public Places, and then ultimately would need approval by the commission.
So let's talk about the funding. If it's Art in Public Places, they have a budget, right?
That is correct, yes.
So I don't know what the process is. Do we, as a commission, can we direct them on pieces of art, or how does that work? Educate me.
Sure. It would actually be anything public art goes through the – it could be referred to Art in Public Places, and they would make a recommendation that would then come back to you.
For the full commission.
Okay. And what is what's the recommendation of the administration?
So of the three options that were presented by the artist, it would be one that it would be new artwork, and it would memorialize the piece that is being deaccessioned. And as Brandy stated, it would be a 12 by 12 feet, and it would be a painting.
So is it? It's basically going to be the same thing that the previous art was. It's just that it's not going to be in the ground. It's going to be something that will be.
And it won't be tiles.
I'm sorry?
And it won't be tiles. It's a
paper. Yeah. Okay. So again, what's the next step? We would, if we want to move this forward, we would send this to back to the commission to send it to AIPP?
Correct.
Okay, Commissioner Fernandez will move the item. I'm supportive. So we would move it back to the commission with a favorable recommendation to send it to AIPP, urging them to accept the piece of art. Is that right? And the budget of $25,000? Mm-hmm. Commissioner Ariola, are you okay with that?
Yeah, I'm fine with it, but, you know, just sort of, you know, I guess hindsight's 2020. I mean, yeah. How did this even happen? Yeah. I'm just curious. I'm looking at the date the contract was signed was 2004. The installation was 2014.
Mm-hmm.
Why did it take 10 years?
It's a great question.
It is a great question. We were obviously that was a previous administration.
Yeah.
And from my understanding, it took that long to get the artist on board and to get the artwork completed. But yeah, I wasn't here, so I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's hard to believe. They signed a contract in 2004. It took them 10 years. To do this, I've actually done mosaic myself. Turkey's really great at it. You send them a design, and within 3 weeks, it's at your doorstep for a fraction of the price. You can get this done like that. I mean, you get a graphic design.
And in 10 years, the piece deteriorated.
Well, this started falling apart within a year, if I'm reading this correctly.
That is correct, yes.
So, I mean, is there any warranty that this artist gives to their work? I mean, why does it fall apart a year into it?
There is a 2-year warranty on the artwork, and the artist attempted to repair it within that 2 years, but it never proved satisfactory because at the end of the day, the substrate for the work was incorrectly constructed.
Yeah, well, I mean, and we're going to go back to the same artist to do something. Yeah, you know what? I'm not going to vote for this.
Yeah,
you should stand by your product. I don't know all the history, but I'm just reading this, and I'm like, this seems like, you know, an abomination out of the get-go. They don't stand by their work. I mean, it's very predictable that this could happen because, you know, if you do a pool, and you tile it, the tiles can come up from the water, and so you use special sealants and thinset so that it doesn't pop off. There's mosaics all over the world, and they last forever. I mean, there's some that are still thousands of years old. This didn't even make it a year, and we're going to give them a new contract? Yeah, I'm not going to vote for it.
Yeah. Commissioner Fernandez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the action here is to allow AIPP, Arts and Public Places Committee, to review it and to make a recommendation.
That's correct.
Okay.
And then eventually, and we wanted the, if approved by FERC, to move forward because there is money tied to it. We would need to identify the $25,000.
Okay. And quality control, is that at all in any way part of the AIPP review? Because we constitute these boards to guide us with their expert opinion and their expertise. I'm not an expert in the right type of adhesives or paints or materials for mosaics like this, but does AIPP review that type of stuff?
Absolutely. They review the maintenance requirements, and this work would be in a completely different medium. It would be a paint on board that would be sited in an interior location.
Okay. So their recommendation would be based on that criteria. So we're not awarding it today. We're just giving AIPP the opportunity to be able to chime in on this, and then that comes back to the full city commission at that point for the approval of the full body.
That's correct.
Okay, so. But what I'm confused about, and thank you for your questions because it's clarifying for me, is about the $25,000 because why would we have to pay? I thought if AIPP wants it, if they approve it, don't they have a budget?
Yes. And Brandy can speak to that, but we just wanted to, we're going through the process to make sure because of all these questions of, it is a previous artist where it's been going through all the different committees, it received approval in the neighborhood committee, but because there is tied, and as Commissioner Ariola mentioned, it would be with the same artist to spend money again, this is why it's here for review by FERC.
Yeah, so why did, who was responsible for the base that was that artist, or was that the city that was responsible for creating whatever the foundation was? Marcia, good morning.
Good morning, it's okay.
You're invited to.
No, it's okay.
Okay. So the question is, there was a warranty. Who was responsible for creating the base or the foundation for the artwork? Was that the city's responsibility or the artist?
It was ultimately the artist's responsibility. He did use the contractor that the city was using, but by his artist contract, he is responsible for all aspects of the installation. And as Marcia just pointed out to me, Art in Public Places was the original commissioning agency for this work and did pay for it and has paid for its upkeep and maintenance throughout the years, as well as the Parks Department, who's invested significant staff time in restoring this work. And funding would need to be identified separate from Art in Public Places because it's not available in the Art in Public Places fund at this time.
Well, I share your concerns, Commissioner Arreola. I mean, we paid for it once. There was a warranty. It took 10 years to do it, and then it fell apart. And now I don't really even know why we're doing this, honestly. But I am fully supportive of sending it to AIPP with a recommendation. So let's send it to AIPP and see what they have to say, what their recommendation is. They may say that they don't even think we should have this piece of art. I don't know, but I'm not an expert on this.
I just have a question.
Yes.
What's the current balance in the AIPP fund?
It's about $146,000.
So why would an AIPP be the funding source for this?
Those monies are projects that have contributed from the GEO bond. Specifically, that funding was generated by the Maurice Skibb Park.
Okay. But we have another large sum of money going in there, don't we?
Eventually, yes. Our next contribution will be from the Par 3 Bayshore Park project.
How much is that?
It's approximately $395,000 off the top of my head.
I think that we send it to AIPP and get them to react to it. Mm-hmm. And if they want to allocate $25,000 of their future money, they can do that. But they may come back and say they have other priorities for artwork.
I just don't want today's motion to be a signal to the AIPP one way or another. I don't want them to be pressured by the recommendation of this committee. To the contrary, I want them. I like their autonomy. I like their independence. And so I don't want us making this motion to be in any way an influence on them. We just want to get their expertise on this.
Sure.
Yeah, so, and I'm glad because your questions have really clarified what the motion would be. So we're not making any recommendation. Our only action is to send it. We have to send it to the commission with a recommendation that it be sent to AIPP for them to review, we don't have any funding, so they need to act on it. They need to do their own independent review. As Commissioner Fernandez says, we're not recommending one way or the other. We're sending it there for them to review it and to take action as they would in their normal course for any other piece of art that they would like. That's I think we're in agreement on that, right?
Yes.
Are you okay with that, Commissioner? No recommendation in favor of the piece. Just send it to AIPP and let them do their thing. Jason, do you have what you need?
Yeah, so I'll show it that FERC is sending a recommendation to request the commission to refer the item to AIPP for review.
Yep, for their independent review process. So, you know, we're not recommending one way or the other whether or not AIPP, because that's what they're there for. That's their job. Let them do their job, right?
Independent review. Got it. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Great. Guys, item 14, let's take this, Commissioner Arreola. This is iconic entrance. Go ahead. Let me let you tee this up.
Yeah. So as you may know, the county is going to be undertaking pretty significant work along the Venetian Causeway in the next several years. And You know, I just kind of want to put it on our radar that you know, there's an entrance sign now. I don't know if it'll be retained or not, but you know, at the culmination of that work, do we want to start thinking about having a beautiful sign as people coming, you know, from Miami into into Miami Beach on the Venetian Causeway to have an iconic sign?
Commissioner Fernandez.
It's a no-brainer. I think it's great.
Yeah, because right now there's not really a great sign. So what's the process for this, though? Is there – good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Mr. Chair, Vice Chair, members of the committee, Elizabeth Munoz, Facilities and Fleet Management Interim Director. We currently have – or the Office of Capital Improvements is currently working on two entrance signs, just to put it in perspective, the one on Normandy and 71st and the one on Harding and 87th. Those are being right now in the design phase. And just to give you an idea of what the cost would be, each of them is $700,000 and $500,000, respectively. So we would submit this as part of the capital project.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I know. I mean, to give you an example of how long these things take, those two in North Beach, I worked on when I was chairing the North Beach Blue Ribbon panel in 2014. So it just takes a really long time to work these things through the process. Especially the one coming into into Miami Beach from the Miami side on Normandy, that's going to be a big sign designed by Alan Schulman. It's going to be beautiful. I don't know what you guys might think. My thought is for the Venetian, it's a residential neighborhood. It's a very small causeway. It doesn't have to be anything, you know, super elaborate, but just to start budgeting some money now, yep. Designing it now, you got to go out to bid, blah, blah, blah. It'll take years to get done. So I'd like to do it simultaneously with the end of the construction on the Venetian Causeway so that we have a nice sign.
Perfect. Is there anything in the capital budget? Because I know that there's a long list of projects and then they get prioritized. Is there even an item right now?
There is not. So we were submitted as part of the budget process this year.
Okay. So why don't we then, if you want to move, that we add that to the list of capital items. Jason, you look like you want to say something. Go ahead.
Thank you, Chair. So along those lines, is just as we had done in 24, as items came up through committees and through the commission, where there was an interest in it being included into the upcoming budget, is this, I think, would come out of here with a favorable recommendation, go to commission for their endorsement, and then, you know, Tamika and I would include this, if you remember the slides, of these are the things that came through the fiscal year that the commission had recommended to it be included in funding, and then that kind of moves up the priority list when we're going through and trying to identify funding. So that would be a recommendation to be included as part of the 25 capital improvement program, which will be beginning in January.
Yeah, and as Commissioner Arreola said, this is, you know, this is a smaller causeway. It, you know, I don't think we need to necessarily spend $500,000, but yeah, I think if Commissioner Arreola, I think you're moving the item. Let's make it recommending that it be added to the capital improvement project
for the 25. Okay.
Report, and then start the process for doing estimates and so forth, and let's move it forward. You okay with that, Commissioner Fernandez?
Unanimous.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. You got what you need, right? Commissioner Arreola, you've got this protection for tenants. I'm not sure exactly. Oh, we're going to hear that at January 24. Is that right?
Correct.
Item 16?
Correct. Yes.
Okay. And then yep. Is somebody else going to pick that up or
That would to be determined.
Oh, okay.
I believe there was the item had mostly been resolved. There was just coming back with an update, I think, from the outside Miami Legal Services for a short update.
You had a companion item,
yeah.
Commissioner Fernandez, so I'm not, you know, twisting your arm, but, you know, you can merge them if you want.
We can merge them. Yeah, that's
okay.
Fine.
Okay, so let's show that item merged with the item that Commissioner Fernandez has, right?
Mr. Chair,
which item number is that then?
That's item 16.
To be merged with.
So, Commissioner Fernandez, do you
had an item also regarding
legal
tenant
services.
Tenant protections and,
yeah.
It's comprehensive, and I think it's they go together.
Is that still here in committee that we know?
No.
I don't think so, but I'm happy to take it over. Yeah.
All right, so why don't you put Commissioner Fernandez's name on this one, and then he'll decide.
What's your change sponsor?
Yeah, he'll decide how he wants to deal with that, okay? And then item 12, this is Commissioner Dominguez. I don't know if she's still, is she still here? So who's from the city has got this item? Do we know? Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Major Daniel Morgalo of the Police Department, members of the committee. This item came about from a meeting that we had with Commissioner Dominguez and some local activists that brought to our attention these cards that look like coasters, and they actually have two independent tests on the card themselves that detect GHB or ketamine, which is the two primary drugs that are put in people's drinks to incapacitate them and facilitate sexual battery. So what we are looking at doing potentially is kicking off a campaign for awareness to coincide with either spring break or Memorial Day weekend to basically raise awareness, partner with some of our local establishments, and give out these cards to tourists coming to our city so that they have the capacity to protect themselves and raise their awareness to prevent them from having something put in their drink.
This question. Are there tests, readily available, easy to use tests for fentanyl? To your knowledge, do you know?
To my knowledge, no. And because fentanyl is so lethal, potentially, that it becomes very dangerous to test for fentanyl. These are available in the market, and they've actually been quite successful.
I mean, the reason I'm asking about fentanyl is just because, drug use, unfortunately, is rampant. And, fentanyl now is finding its way into, recreational drugs. And then the consequences are devastating. We want to discourage drug use, but folks, when they're coming here, they're buying it from people they don't know. You know better than anybody. There's things in there nobody knows. And are there things on the market where people who want to take recreational drugs can at least exclude fentanyl as being one of the ingredients that might find themselves in whatever it is they're going to take?
We can look into it, sir, but not that I'm aware of at this time.
Yeah, because, somebody thinks they're taking just a party drug, all of a sudden they die.
Yeah, we've had two homicides like that in our city from 2021.
Oh, yeah.
No, where people bought what they thought were Percocets, and they were actually fentanyl.
Correct. Yeah, correct. My question, hesitation on this is, how does we want to protect the public for sure. How is this put out into the public sphere where, either we're sending, the wrong message, or we're giving a false sense of security. I'm just curious how, have other cities done this, and how have they done it?
So I'm going to turn it over to Tanya, who's our victim advocate supervisor. Our nearest city that we're familiar with that's done it is Fort Lauderdale, so she can speak on that.
Good morning. I'm Tanya Sanchez, victim services supervisor for the Miami Beach Police Department. Yes, to answer your questions, is the Fort Lauderdale Police Department implemented the Bar Watch program, and there's over 26 bars participating in the program. My understanding is the police sponsors, if I may, the program, and they participate by providing these coasters at the bars, and the victims, it has two spots. The victims can drop, like a drop of the drink in the coasters, and if it turns blue, darker blue, then it indicates that it's been spiked. And I brought copies if you want to see the program in Fort Lauderdale for all of you, just in case if you want to take a look at it. But as a victim advocate, I get to experience and I get to service the victims in the aftermath of victimization. And I not only see the physical violation, the impact of the physical violation, but the emotional and financial and the long-lasting effects that these crimes bring upon victims, not to mention the fear and the distrust that long lingers in the victims in the aftermath of victimization.
Yes, and this will only take test for GHB and
ketamine.
But those aren't the only drugs, sadly, that knock people out. So again, the false sense of illusion. I'm worried about. By the way, this is date rape, but it happens to men all the time here. There are women out there who prey on men. Knock them out and then take their money, wallets, watches, all of that. That's pretty common. So again, I'm just curious how we can do this in a way where it's effective. It has the intended benefits. I'm hesitant to create a false sense of illusion. Like, hey, this is if it only tests for two drugs, does it make somebody lower their guard from something else? So I don't know. Help me here.
Yeah. So, first of all, do we have an idea of how big the problem is in our community? So, and I would imagine that there are instances that never get reported, right? So it's they're probably underreported.
That's absolutely right. And just before I came, I pulled up the statistics for the sexual battery unit. In total, we had 92 cases, and 20 of those 92 cases were alcohol an issue, and 3 of those were GHB from the same subject, which is that case is, as we speak, it's in the prosecution phase. He has been arrested, and all the victims have been identified and served. And 5 of those 92 cases are unknown drugs, and 2 other are cocaine.
So the statistics, is that for 1 year or for 10 years?
This is for 2023.
So far.
Year to date. Up to today.
Okay. And so to Commissioner Arriola's point, so for example, the cocaine would not have been tested, right? So.
No.
Yeah. And how long has the program in Fort Lauderdale been going? Do we know?
I'm not sure about that.
Okay. Mr. Chair?
Yeah, go ahead.
I have a question. Have there been any unintended consequences that you are aware of coming out of the Bar Watch initiative that Fort Lauderdale has implemented?
Not that I'm aware.
No? Okay. And this mirrors that?
Right.
And what is the funding that's being asked for here?
It's relatively inexpensive. Each one of those coasters has 2 tests on it, and the range for about $1, $1.50 each.
I'm sorry, can you speak into the microphone?
Yeah, please? I apologize. Yeah. The cost per coaster is about $1.50 each.
But what's the funding amount you're asking for today?
$2,500.
Oh, it's $2,500. Okay. It's very nominal. I mean, considering that that we're not aware of any unintended consequences coming out of Fort Lauderdale, this does provide some protection. But you are absolutely right, Commissioner Arriola. It doesn't provide full protection. It's kind of like a condom; it doesn't provide full protection either. Yet, governments and agencies all over the place put their logos on them and distribute them. I'd be happy to move this item on behalf of Commissioner Dominguez.
Okay, thank you. Let me ask a question. The coaster itself, what's written on the coaster? I guess everybody knows what the purpose of the coaster is, right? And then is there any disclaimer on the thing to address what Commissioner Arriola is talking about to say this may or may not, or it's only tests for 2 drugs?
Yes, it has a logo. It says Bar Watch, and it gives you the instructions for how to use the coaster, and it gives you numbers, emergency numbers, and that's pretty much what it's on the coaster.
What about if we added, Commissioner Fernandez, that the coaster needs to state that there may be drugs that that are not being tested that could be used, something like to that effect.
Yeah,
I believe it may have disclaimer on the back.
Okay.
That talks about the tests that it tests for. And we have the ability, working with the manufacturer, to custom brand it however we want for the city of Miami Beach.
Okay. So I will, if you're making a motion, I'll second it. But what I would like to do is have a recommendation that we implement a pilot program for 1 year and then have a briefing on how the pilot went, so that if there are any unintended consequences or anything like that, they can be addressed after a one-year period. Are you okay with that?
I agree.
Commissioner Ayala?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm okay. This is not a lot of money.
Yeah. Jason, you probably have this in your back pocket, right? So we're not going to need to do a budget amendment on this, I don't think.
I don't think so. I think it would be considered de minimis and be held within the police budget.
I think so.
Yeah, the bigger question I have, is, from a PR communication perspective, when we have particularly, tourists coming here, I gave the example of this happens to men quite a bit down here. Obviously, the horrific effects of rape that go on, all that. But there's just a lot of people are victims to being either overly served or having drugs put in their drink to create an economic crime as well. And to what extent do we want to think about public messaging, either in men's restrooms at the bar, saying, "Be aware that you can wake up without your wallet and watch in the morning," or obviously same with women in a bit of a different context, but because these cards could be very helpful, but I don't want them to create a false sense of illusion, like, "Hey, I tested something," but there's so many other ways to incapacitate somebody. I don't want people to feel like this false sense of security. I don't know.
It'll be interesting to see, Ms. through the chair, how the industry, how the bars, because I guess this is the way that this is distributed through the establishments, right?
Yes.
So, I think it's worth testing to see how do the bars react to the distribution of this within their establishment. I fear that perhaps some of the establishments might not want to pass these around because it creates the perception that someone is in an unsafe establishment.
Yeah, that's right. We've got a huge problem here or something.
Exactly. But I do think we should test it. I think we should test it because, maybe there's other ways of disseminating it, especially during spring break periods. Maybe the Goodwill Ambassadors and some of the other individuals who are here can disseminate it rather than the establishments. But as Commissioner Riola stated, there should be other messaging involved as well. And we should work on that in the future. But I think for now, I think this is so nominal.
Okay. So we'll show it unanimous that we'll send it back to the commission with a recommendation and with those comments we had about the disclaimer. Go ahead, Jason.
And we'll show it. So it was unanimous that the FERC is sending this to commission with a favorable recommendation to adopt and implement the program for a one-year pilot.
Yep.
Okay. Thank you.
And then to report back with a study and see if the commission wants to extend the program or continue the program.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I appreciate
it.
Let's call up item 15. This was a funding that item. This is on Lincoln Road. Commissioner Fernandez, this is your item, and Commissioner Rosen Gonzalez. So I think if memory served me, there was like four funding items. So let me let you tee that up.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So this was a funding request from the Lincoln Road Business Improvement District for dollars for a number of things. Part of the dollars was for a Lincoln Road welcome sign. Another set of funding requests pertained to year-round holiday lighting. Another one of the funding requests had to do with an instrument park in the 400 block of Lincoln Road. And so the commission had initially nodded to potentially support some of this funding. I wanted to have just a little bit bigger discussion about it here at the Finance Committee, because certainly we want to see the activation and the physical improvements in Lincoln Road. We want to elevate the visitor and resident experience as well on Lincoln Road. And anything like this that we can do certainly does that. You know, the idea of the Free Notes Harmony Park for adults and children. It's a wonderful idea, and the Lincoln Road welcome sign. It could be something very popular and very, very iconic. The reality is that if we're going to be putting dollars into this, I just want to make sure, number one, that we're not putting dollars into something that then we're going to rip out when we start the Lincoln Road Improvement Project. And number two, that if we're going to – are we going to be putting dollars into something that is going to need HPB approval, that's going to need other approvals? Are we going to be able to get that? Has there been any preliminary staff review by HPB staff? Or can there be other ways of getting this placed there through a special events permit? What is going to be the process for this? Because it sounded to me, a lot of times we allocate dollars in the budget for something, and then it follows a process. You know, it goes to either DRB or HPB, or goes through the administrative vetting process. But this was awarding dollars and then very quickly installing. And so I just wanted to be very careful of that. I wanted to make sure that we follow the proper steps, the proper vetting, because when we don't, then we all get in trouble. Then we have people calling us, people complaining to us that we skipped the process because someone is our friend and all that type of stuff, and I don't want that. So who from the administration? I see
Excuse
we have.
Excuse me, who are you?
Annabelle Yobes, I'm the executive director for Lincoln Road Bid.
Okay, I'm going to ask you to step back because I have not even decided if I'm going to take public comments, so just have a seat. So what I want to do first, thank you so much. What I want to do is, first of all, get this in posture. I think, Commissioner Fernandez, there may have been four items, mm-hmm. four funding items. So, Elizabeth, can we go through those and try to identify what are the four items?
So the first two items the Commissioner Fernandez alluded to were the installation of instruments on Lincoln Road on the 400 block, as well as the welcome sign. Both of these are going to be placed in the 400 block and in Drexel Avenue. There was another third item, which I believe was $38,000 for programming.
Yeah, if I can. There's three items.
Okay, three items.
$29,644.35 for a Lincoln Road place sign at the 400 block.
$29,000 what?
$644.35.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And that's for the sign?
That's for the sign. Okay. $48,980.63 for outdoor musical instruments at something called the Free Notes Harmony Park. And the third item was $139,121.50 for year-round holiday lighting.
Give me that number again.
The $48,980.63.
And what's that for?
Outdoor musical instruments at the Free Notes Harmony Park.
Oh, I got that one. $48,980.63. That's right. Outdoor instruments, and then the welcome sign $29,644.34.
And the lights are $139,000.
And the program is that what you're calling programming?
No, there's no programming at all.
Oh,
$139,121.50 for year-round lighting, holiday lighting.
And Mr. Chair, and
please,
if I may, the programming, we got that approved in the budget because Lincoln Road, the bid, does a lot of programming.
That's right.
That's not impacted by any regulatory review, HPB review, or generally impacted by the construction work. These are, you know, are they more permanent installations? Lincoln Road is in a historic district. Are we putting money in here that we don't know that it's going to get approval? What's going to happen here? What's the process that's going to be followed?
Yeah, no, share that. Elizabeth, and you have the same three items with the same three amounts?
So yes, that we're all, that's correct.
Yeah. So let me, I just want to say this out loud, that I don't know if it's true or not, and I'm going to let you react to it if you'd like. But the rumor I'm hearing is that you're new and they paid you a lot more money than they paid the prior executive director, and now there's a hole in the budget and they want the city to fill the budget. Not true? Please, I'm going to invite you to speak, because I'm wondering where all these new requests are coming from all of a sudden for Lincoln Road. I mean, it seems like a lot all at once. Go ahead and introduce yourself.
Annabelle Yopis, Lincoln Road Business Improvement Director. I don't even think that even has anything to do with this matter. I think what we're finding is the budget that we currently have as a bid is shrinking every year because the cost of things are not what they used to be. So the items that we've represented and presented to you all is meant to be temporary. Both of those, the sign, the welcome sign, as well as the Harmony Park, can be relocated based on what the capital improvement project design is. So our goal, just like you, because you've all been super supportive of Lincoln Road, is how do we elevate one of the main entrances to Lincoln Road? And that's really what this is all about. This has nothing to do with anything else.
How much is your budget?
1.3 million.
Mm-hmm. And you don't in 1.3 million, you don't have $29,644.48 to pay for this?
Well, we feel this is something the city would have partnered with us to do. We're spending close to $150,000 to bring art to Lincoln Road. That's coming out of the bids budget. We're also spending close to $125,000 just doing landscape festival, again, to elevate the road. So there's a lot of costs. In addition to, we spent over $500,000 in programming. So when you add all that up, it's very limited to the budget that we have. And our budget doesn't increase every year. It stays stagnant.
Well, I think 1.3 is a very significant budget, honestly. So, Commissioner Fernandez, I share your concern about investing. When is the Lincoln Road project set to begin? Elizabeth, do you know when we're working on that? That's like a $50 million project, I think.
Roughly, I believe that they're set.
Commissioner Richardson, the last I heard from Capital Improvement, they're starting phase two sometime in March of 2024. Phase two only encompasses Drexel and Meridian. It does not encompass anything to do with the spine of the road. Phase three, which would be the spine of the road, probably won't happen until 2025. So, again, we're just trying to find some sort of transition elevation with what Lincoln Road is today. Lincoln Road needs attention. It is the city center. And I think it's only due that we have a partnership with the city to continue to elevate Lincoln Road.
Well, I think you do have a partnership to the tune of about $50 million, right?
But that's not happening yet. It's going to take some time.
It's $50 million of taxpayer dollars. I mean, it's a lot of money.
Commissioner, that was supposed to happen, again, in 2015. So the road has been waiting for quite some time, and it impacts the residents who use this road every single day, who comment every single day.
But, Mr. Chair, I have to say, what really impacts the residents are the empty vacancies there. The empty vacancies, and I know, you know, we have a lot to do with it, and every opportunity we're told, our building department, our regulations. But also, it's not just our regulations and our building department. You know, things could be better on Lincoln Road if the property owners, you know, help themselves in filling the vacancies. And sometimes, you know, they're their own worst enemies. Let me ask you something with a welcome sign. Is that a permanent structure?
No.
Okay. Does that require lighting? Does that require...
The electrical is simply plugging into the existing outlet that's there.
Okay. Have you guys submitted a permit or anything like that with staff?
We were going to go through special events permit. That's the process we were going to take. We were not going to just install it without going through the permitting process.
Okay. Through the special events permit process. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so, you know, what I want to, you know, with something like the welcome sign, I do think it could be something positive for the area. I think maybe we designate the money there for it, and upon approval of that permit, then issue, you know, we finalize, we ratify the dollars. I just don't want to say we're going to go ahead and automatically just, you know, give this money without having the permit approved. I think first we're going to get some vetting here, and I think it's going to become something iconic. I just want to make sure, you know, I wanted to make sure that it's something temporary, that it can be moved so that once the project is done, you know, you can put it back there again. Let me ask you this, this Free Notes Harmony Park. Mm-hmm. Okay. Explain that to me a little bit better, because, you know, how does that play into the reconstruction of Lincoln Road? What's going to happen during the construction? Are you going to remove it? Is it going to come back? Is something different going to go there? Has it been reviewed for safety by the Parks Department? Because I know that the Parks Department is always very careful about the equipment that we put out there, especially for children use. So has there been any review by the Parks Department of the park?
Yes, we actually met with the Parks Department, and they provided the vendor's name, and that's who they've been using in other areas of Miami Beach. So we spoke with them.
Yeah, but I don't mean the vendor. I mean, the vendor, you know, we have vendors that provide a lot of products. Has the Parks Department actually vetted the Free Notes equipment?
We could definitely share it with them. Just so you know, this is not like anything you ride on or you jump on. It's literally a place-making opportunity that people can engage with as they're walking by. It is to be located on a planter bed that the plants do not grow because mm-hmm. there's no irrigation. So every time plants are planted, they're dead. So we try to find a solution to make it look nice on that 400 blocks. So the goal is that we were going to put artificial turf and then put the instruments on top. And all they do is they screw them into the ground. And that's what the goal is. But we're happy to share with the parks and get their opinion.
Is Parks here today? No.
And what's, Eric, what's the permitting process for all of this? I'm hearing special events permit, special events permit. How long? So let's say we approve, you know, to put in the budget, you know, dollars for the welcome sign, dollars for this Harmony Park. How long is a special event permit good for?
Typically, a special event permit is for short-term event-type programming. I know that we have done up to 60 days in the past.
Up to 60 days, but then the Lincoln Road project doesn't start till when then? It's not starting within 60 days. It's going to go beyond 60 days.
Sorry, I don't understand the question.
The Lincoln Road capital improvement project, when does that start?
Oh, well, phase one is complete. Phase two is probably going to start summer of next year. And phase three is probably looking at about 18 months, so summer 2025.
Okay. So, you know, you are going to have to apply for a special event permit for the Free Notes Park and the welcome sign. Mm-hmm. But you're probably going to, because that only gets you through 60 days.
Yeah, we would ask for, you know, extension, or we would create another one until we figure out what the capital improvement project design is going to be.
But, Mr. Attorney, is that appropriate to circumvent the Historic Preservation Board process just by continuing to renew a special event permit application?
I mean, to your point, a special event is a special event.
If the item is temporary in nature, then the special event permit process would be appropriate.
But that's only 60 days. An approval for a special event permit is only 60 days. Can a special event permit be renewed indefinitely?
Most likely not.
Most likely not. Okay. All right. So so that's, you know, you're going to have to get with staff and, you know, figure that out because, you know, we're going to invest here dollars into something that then the community is going to like, that you're only going to have a 60-day approval for. And then when that 60-day approval ends and then it goes away, you know who people are going to blame? They're going to blame us. They're going to say, oh, there's bureaucracy again. Well, no, I mean, because it wasn't followed through properly from the beginning. You know, so I just want to make sure that before we get this out there, if really what you need is a Historic Preservation Board approval, you know, submit your Historic Preservation Board application and get the proper approval so that you don't end up investing in something that you're only going to be able to have there for 60 days.
Exactly. On what about on the lighting? Is that would also require, is that permanent lighting?
My understanding of it would be like the city has put up in other areas of the city. I know, you know, all of these items were discussed during the budget workshop area. And I know Commissioner Fernandez originally discussed this, but this item was, you know, later had been dropped under the consideration that, you know, within the next year or so that the whole road would be going through a massive improvement. I think that was, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, Commissioner, but I think that was our discussion related to that. But
no, it's a good point. I mean, why would we spend $139,000 only to have to take it out?
And if I may clarify, that $139,000 is just for the installation of 1 year in maintenance. It would have to be a recurring cost.
Wow. Recurring cost?
Yes.
Wow.
Meanwhile, the $29,000 and the $48,000 are only one-time costs?
One-time expense, from what I understand.
Colleagues,
yeah.
I want to be supportive of Lincoln Road. I mean, it does need our support. And I want to be supportive of the businesses there that are trying to thrive and survive there. I'm okay setting aside dollars in the budget for the welcome sign, for the Free Notes Harmony Park, but their approval needs to go through the process. They need to apply with staff. They got to get the proper approvals so that, and then knowing that, okay, yeah, we have the money there designated for you.
Yeah, no, I can get there on the lighting. It's a lot, and now we're just learning that's going to be every year. But yeah, but again, yeah. I would like to see your budget. Is that something you could send me?
We submitted the budget to the city manager in August.
Okay. Could you just send it directly to me?
Absolutely. More than happy to.
Because I just don't understand, out of $1.3 million, why you don't have basically $80,000. I mean, you're making choices on how you want to spend your money, right? You're spending $1.3 million, and you're making choices how you want to spend it, and you want your budget to be more than $1.3, and you want the city and the taxpayers to supplement that. And that's what I'm having some trouble with. And I also believe it needs to go through the proper process. You know, I'd like to see your budget. Commissioner Riola.
Yeah, just say, you know, part of the irony of the delay in getting the renovation done in this way before your time, I was on the selection committee that selected the design firm. I think this was back in 2015 or 14. You know, and then the negotiations between the city and the property owners of Lincoln Road broke down because, you know, we couldn't agree on the phase, the total amount, but also the phase in of the construction, because they were concerned of having the road shut down during construction or parts of it. And so, you know, we went back and forth. We really didn't get to an agreement. And then COVID happens. You know, had we been a little bit more, both sides, but I think really the property owners been a little bit more willing at the time to just bite the bullet and get construction going, we could have used those 2 years during COVID when nobody was shopping, nobody was out, to have done the entire street. But because we just delayed, you know, we're now going to be building at a time when people are back out and shopping and costs have gone up. Mm-hmm. So that's just, you know, the property owners on Lincoln Road have, you know, nobody to blame but themselves.
Yep. Yeah. So Mr. Chair, I just want to, I'll make a motion to set aside money in our budget for the $29,000 for the welcome sign, for the $48,000 for the Harmony Notes Park, so that once they get those approvals from the city, then they can access that money. I don't feel comfortable committing the city to recurring $139,000 on lights right now. I don't think that's reasonable right now to put that in on a recurring basis. You very well have highlighted the size of the budget, and then taking into consideration the amount of time, you know, that Lincoln Road is going to be under construction for, is, I just don't think it makes sense right now.
Yeah, I agree. And how long is the process to go through HBB?
Once an application is submitted, probably 4 months.
4 months. So even if we were to fund this, the earliest we'd be looking at is probably maybe 6 months out or so.
But at least they have the funding. The funding is there, so that once they get the approval, then we can release the funding. I just don't want to release taxpayers' dollars when the process isn't followed. I want to make sure that the process is properly followed. Jason, if it's something temporary, then it's a special events permit, and that's temporary. That's 60 days. But if it's anything more than 60 days, then we have to do it right.
Jason.
Thank you, Chair. I think it would be remiss if, as your CFO, not to mention, you know, we just approved our balanced budget, all, I'm going to say excess, but additional dollars that we were able to scrape together were allocated towards our capital projects. So at this time, and then also remember, when we increased the operating budget, we were required to put approximately, based on our policy on reserves, about $11 million to be set aside to bring us to the 25% goal. We swing between 17 and 25. We funded $3 million on a recurring basis, which was great, but that's still short of the full 11. So now the hope is, obviously, when we bring at the November 28th special commission meeting the year-end wrap-up with the roll-forwards and everything, that we will have a surplus left over of hopefully that $8 million that would allow us to fund up those reserves. Now, obviously, this $78,000 and change is relatively a small amount, but just wanted to mention for the record, you know, that we are not at that goal of the 25%. So if we were to get this to go to commission with a recommendation and come back with a budget amendment, we would be reducing that amount that we were going to be adding to the reserves, which was short anyway. So just for the record, wanted to mention that.
Yeah, so, I mean, we're already short on our commitment of the amount that we want for our reserves.
Well, no, we would know more after the November 28th meeting.
Right.
And I just, if I may, Mr.
Please.
Chair, I just want to put for the record how what we're doing for Lincoln Road, I mean, you know, we're putting $4 million of taxpayers' dollars towards Lincoln Road. Is it outside the bid? Yeah, it's outside the bid. But it's Lincoln Road.
You're right.
It's towards the economy, towards the well-being, and the improvement of this area of our city. And, you know, I think of, you know, Washington Avenue. You know, Washington Avenue, we haven't given Washington Avenue dollars for, you know, semi-permanent installations like this, and they haven't asked us for, neither has Ocean Drive, neither has Collins Park, neither has the Normandy Fountain. So, you know, we are being partners,
and we are
being supportive. In fact, it was the initiative of the city commission. When other neighborhoods came to ask us, proactively came to ask us for dollars for programming, it was all of us as colleagues, as the city commission, that said, you know what, we haven't heard from Lincoln Road, notwithstanding the staff that you all have. Well, we said, let's proactively reach out to Lincoln Road and ask, what dollars for programming does Lincoln Road need? Because we haven't heard from them, yet we've heard from other people. So there is a partnership there, a very strong partnership. So colleagues, I don't know how you all feel we should proceed with this.
I'm not going to be supportive today because I want to see the budget. I don't understand out of 1.3. You know, I think we've given. We just gave, as you said, $4 million. We've got almost $50 million going into capital projects. We haven't given any of these costs of things like that to the other bids, to my knowledge. And there's going to be a whole process of going through HPB.
So, Mr. Chair, if I may, rather, I'll make a motion. I'll see if I can get a second for the welcome sign and the free notes harmony, just to get it set aside on the budget, but not release it, not until the funds are approved. I don't know, Ricky, if you want to support that or not. Certainly not the lights. I'm not going to be so supporting that, because then, you know, it becomes a recurring cost every year. I mean, at least these are one time dollars. You know, $29,000, $48,000. It's a little bit nominal, but a recurring $140,000 cost. You know, no other. You know, Collins Park doesn't get that. The Normandy Fountain doesn't get that. I know Ocean Drive, you know, desperately, you know, needs that lighting there. They asked for it and they didn't get it. And Washington Avenue is not getting it. So I can't treat Lincoln Road differently and give that to you. On the other two, I'm willing to set the dollars aside if you follow the process, if you get that approval, and then, you know, disseminate the dollars once you get that approval.
So you're saying after, if they get an HPB approval, then they could come back to the city and get the funds, but
right,
but they don't get the
money. We need to set the money aside in our budget for it.
Commissioner Ayola, what?
I supported this last time, and it's not in my packet today. I haven't seen the renderings, but, you know, generally I support these types of things where you have, like, these follies, you know, the musical instruments and welcome signs. And my question back then when it was proposed by Commissioner Rosa Gonzalez is this enough money? Is it going to be first class? What I don't want is, like, a rinky-dink sign or, playground, you know, musical equipment that's going to break, because then we're just wasting money. I just want to make sure that it's money well spent, something we're all going to be proud of, that it's really nice looking, and, you know, could potentially become a permanent feature that, you know, guests look forward to when they shop on Lincoln Road, and that this is not just some, you know, thrown together idea, and it's going to be an embarrassing situation. Do you want to opine on that? I mean, are these nice?
Yes, they're very nice. They're all very professional. We would only use professional vendors. Both of them, like I mentioned before, are part of the city vendor list as well. We're happy to send you the renderings so you can see them.
But you're going to have to present this to HPB and get them to approve it, right?
If that's the process we will take that.
Well, I think that is the process.
That is the process.
Yeah. That is the process, yeah.
So the question is, listen, I have no problem, Commissioner Fernandez, if this goes, you know, I'll have to swallow hard, honestly, because I think you guys have asked for a lot of money from the city. And at what point do we have to say, no, we have other communities that need money as well, including capital projects that aren't being funded? So I don't understand really why we would have to pay for all of that. I'm not going to support the lighting for the reasons Commissioner Fernandez said. But on the other two, I don't understand why you guys can't be a partner and pay for part of it. I mean, why do we have to pay for all of it?
How much money are you putting on the table for any of this? Are we funding it at all, or are you guys putting any money?
No, those projects, that is the full funding. You know, just to reiterate, the bid spends over $1 million on programming and other initiatives that enhances the locals as well as the visitor's experience. All this money goes back to the road. So almost entirely what we do as a bid is an extension of what the city does for its residents. So I just wanted to be clear that there's nothing here that it's not going to be a benefit for the residents as well. So I appreciate your consideration and your time, and we understand, Commissioner Fernandez, about the lights, but we're more than happy to go through the HPP process and for the other two items.
Yeah, so the question is, should we leave it here and wait for the HPP approval, or should we recommend putting the money in reserve or as a reserve for availability if it's HPP approved?
What I don't want to do is, you know, add an extra layer of bureaucracy after they've gotten the HPB approval. I'd rather, if they get the HPB approval, then they should be able to access the funds at that point. Because, you know, if the committee meets and or doesn't meet and then it has to go to commission and all that, so we just, it just keeps on adding. So
That's fair because it wouldn't be right to send you through a process and then make you come back and then we say, no, you're not going to have the money.
Yeah. And I get also that this is, you know, it's season is coming up. You know, I get how perhaps something like this might be able to, you know, be an attraction during season, especially when we have Miami Art Week and Art Basel and all that. You know, I'm not opposed to you, you know, putting the sign there, you know, through a special event permit. But if your HPB approval process is going to take longer than the duration of your special event, 60-day special event permit, you know, you might have to take that down until you get your final approval. But I'm not opposed to you having something temporary there if it helps enhance the city and make it more welcoming, you know, and more appealing during Miami Art Week. But, you know, I leave that up to the administration. I want to give the administration some leeway, some discretion to be able to determine, does something require a special event permit approval for something temporary and then require HPB approval. I'm happy to give the administration a little bit of discretion so that we don't get in the way of something good during our high season.
But that's a little bit different from your motion because previously you said that you didn't want to release the funds until it was HPB approval. But now you're saying...
What I'm saying is you're right. You're right, and maybe we just have to wait for the HPB approval because if HPB doesn't approve it, it can't stay there permanently, and so we can't. Yeah, okay, you're right. Okay, I don't disagree with you.
So I think unanimously, and I'm going to give you this. I feel like it's a gift, honestly, because you got a $1.3 million budget and. At some point, we have to say no, but I'm going to be supportive today, and we'll have a favorable recommendation to send this back with a recommendation that the city find the funding and release the funding once it's HPB approved.
So, if I may, so we'll show that the FERC unanimously recommended with a favorable recommendation those two grant agreements, and then for us to present a budget amendment, and I'm assuming that would be at the October 25th.
It wouldn't be a budget amendment. We're just saying you're going to hold it. You're make a recommendation because if they don't get the HPB, you're never going to need the budget amendment, right?
So I'm just trying to assist here to Commissioner Fernandez's point was then what would happen theoretically is they would go through that process and they would have to come back to commission to approve that budget amendment later. So the funding, from my perspective as your CFO, it's neutral until such time as some future date. And
what we want to do is get this back to commission immediately,
right,
to say, and you can put it on consent, to say we're making a commitment to the bid that if they get the HPB, they will get the funding from the city.
Okay, and that time we'll amend the budget then. Okay.
And then when they get the approval, then it'll just be a budget amendment.
After HPB approval. Okay.
Actually, I'm not even sure you would need to bring the budget amendment back to the commission because that's what's going to be on consent as you're doing a pre-authorization.
It would be a separate. Yeah, it would have to be a member budget amendments for public hearings. Yeah. So we would have to.
You can bring it back, but we want to give them a commitment that the money will be there because it's not fair to put someone through a process and then say no, we changed.
And that's why, that's why I was recommending if that is the intention, is that we just amend the budget. The money wouldn't be released until such time as those criteria.
Okay, let's do it, and then if they don't get the approval, then it'll just be another amendment to reverse it out.
So we'll take that as a consent and a budget amendment for the 25th, is what you're asking before, or
yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Are you okay with that, Commissioner Fernandez?
Yes. Thank
you. Commissioner Arreola? Okay. Show it unanimous. Congratulations.
Thank you, Commissioners. Thank you, staff.
Have a good day. Thank you for coming. Commissioner Hill, I want to try to get some of I need to call item 13. I missed this one last time as well, so ran out of time. Who's got item 13? This is air rights easement. Joe, if you're going to tee this up for us.
Yes, sir.
Tell us what this is, and
yes, sir.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Commissioners, this is for an air bridge to connect parcels of property that are on Collins Avenue, 7410 Collins Avenue, with four parcels that are on Harding that are being connected together to provide an air bridge for vehicular traffic to be able to access the parking. It's 600 square feet, and it'll be an open air bridge. So we've already started the process of getting an appraisal. We've already submitted that. That should take 3 to 4 weeks. We should be receiving the appraisal for the air rights portion of the easement by the end of October. And then there's also some utilities along Collins Court that I think we're going to sit down and talk to the developer about having those replaced because they're part of the North Shore D project anyway, which we have under design right now. So it would make sense at this point to take care of some of that.
So what's the potential action today? And I think the you're representing the developer?
Yes, sir.
Come on up. Introduce yourself to us.
Morning,
we don't know you.
Morning, everybody. Graham Penbrook, Howard L. Fernandez, Larkin Tappanus, 200 South Biscayne Boulevard. Yes, we represent 7410 LLC, which is the owner of the two properties. The action item today is very limited. As Joe said, we're still waiting for the appraisal to come back. We have two development board applications that have been sitting for months waiting for this process to get to the point where they can be processed. So our request is for the committee to recommend to the commission, which I understand there's an item already on that agenda for Wednesday, to permit the administration to start reviewing the development board applications. And that is it, right? We know we have to come back to you for the actual deal points, but we have a HBB set. Speaking of HBB, we have two HBB applications and a planning board application that cannot even be looked at until the commission gives the go-ahead. So that's what our request of your recommendation to the commission would be this morning, is to allow the administration to accept, at the applicant's risk, obviously, the review of those applications. And in the event that the commission decides not to go forward with the easement, we would have spent our money in vain. But we need to get that process moving. That's all we request today.
So where are we again, Joe, with the appraisal?
We submitted, we gave the work order to our consultant on October the 4th. It takes 3 to 4 weeks, Commissioner. We expect to get that appraisal back by before the end of the month.
And so, Graham, let me ask. So you understand that if this committee recommends that the full commission allow you to move forward, you're completely at risk, because if the appraisal comes back and we can't come to terms on the value, then you're going to potentially lose whatever you've invested in working on this.
100%. They understand that, you know, they understand that it's at their own risk. We provided an agreement to the reimbursement agreement to the department in August. And whatever additional hold harmless or other documents that the city requires, they're willing to do.
I'll look to the attorneys. Is this something that we can do?
It is, and Mr. Chair, I'd just like to clarify so that the matters would not be heard by HPB or Planning Board until the easement is considered and approved by the City Commission. Is that correct, Graham?
We understand that as well,
okay.
Yes.
Okay, so that's within your discretion then.
Commissioners, are you guys okay with that?
You want to provide some guidance here? Are we okay doing this?
Yes. It's an administrative review. You're not going to get a binding HPB or planning board approval out of it, and reserving the city commission's ability to weigh in on the transaction.
So we lose nothing by just keeping the ball rolling.
You lose nothing.
I'm assuming you want to do this because it just right now you can't move forward and get any work done, right?
Correct. We're stuck, and we've been stuck since we started this process, and we can't move any of those applications forward. So.
Okay. So unless I'm failing to – if I'm missing something, I don't see the harm.
Yeah, we're not approving anything, right?
I have a question.
Go ahead.
And I'm sorry because, you know, I like to get briefed on these things, and I wasn't briefed on this, and so – you know, I'm always available. Anyone that reaches out to my office, anyone that calls my office, asks for an email, I'm always available, and I usually accommodate to other people's schedule, not mine, but I accommodate to them. So in the future, I do need to be briefed on these things. I see that there's going to be 18 residential units.
There's a total of 18 on both sides? And I can show if you're willing, I can put up my slides and show you guys.
No, I like getting these things in advance.
Not on the day of the meeting. Yes. So there's two halves to the project. 18 units on Collins with retail on the ground floor in the existing CVS building. Okay. On Harding, there are 9 townhouses with about 35,000 square feet of office. So it's a true mixed-use development that includes retail, office, and residential.
And so there's, if I know the area, I think I know this is the area, there used to be a gym that used to be in a movie theater there that I used to work out in that gym. Does this touch any historic property?
The CVS building, and guys, if you could put the slides up at the chair's discretion, obviously.
Go ahead.
So the red box there is the parking lot that mm-hmm. serves the CVS building. That's the portion that will be townhouses and office. And the CVS building is on the southeast corner there. This is what it looks like. So originally CVS was built as Pantry Pride in the 1950s. It's still a contributing building. And what we're doing as part of the project is bringing those contributing elements back in the renovation. They got lost when it turned into an Eckerd and then a CVS. So we're removing they're replacing that giant empty parking lot with a new mixed-use building, and that's what the CVS looks today. So that, again, was the Pantry Pride. In the conversion to Eckerd, it lost a lot of its storefront that we're reintroducing to bring it back and put glass, especially on 74th Street. You can see, again, that's the existing alley. Mm-hmm. Nothing to write home about. This is the 600 square feet. So this is what it will look like, right? You can see on the right-hand side is what we're proposing and what will be reviewed by, obviously, with HPB and Planning Board. The right-hand side is the CVS building. You can see the architectural elements from the original building are being retained there in the corner with the residential above. On the left of your drawing is the parking lot. With the vertical element, the tower element is the office, and the townhouses are on along.
Graham, just go back again. I just want to make sure I'm looking at this. So on the far, far right is Collins Avenue?
Yes.
Okay, because that parking lot was on the west side
Correct.
Of the CVS, I think. Yes. Is that right?
Yes, it was across the parking lot is across Collins Court from.
This bridge, this vehicular, is but in over the alley. Is that right?
Correct. And as Joe said, it's open air. It's not. It's not going to have any floor area attached to it. We're not requesting a vacation or anything like that. It's similar to the Tides or the Betsy, that mm-hmm. kind of connection across the alley. So let's. Here's another. This is a view. JJ and his team did from the street, looking at the renovated storefront. So you can see the reintroduction of all that storefront that had been removed when the CVS and the Eckerd got built. So that all that historical elements are being reintroduced. This is a view from Harding showing you the townhouses that will front along Harding, and then the office behind it. And this again shows you the entrance to the alley,
Mr. Chair.
You go ahead.
Yeah. Just for the interest of time, I can't support this today because I don't have enough information on it. But I know, you know, it seems like you have the support for it. But Grant, let's just meet at some point, please.
Sure.
Please.
We have a meeting scheduled for tomorrow, so I'll see you then.
There you go.
So is this is the project going to be townhome sales and rentals, or is it just all condos, or what is it?
The townhomes we assume are for sale product. And JJ, I don't know as to their multifamily element. I'm not sure about it.
The piece above CVS.
Yeah. Okay. We're not sure about it. I assume it will probably be first.
Commissioner Ariola, you'll move it.
I'll move it.
And then I'll second it, so show it 2-1. And then you all do whatever you need to do to memorialize what we've agreed here. The applicant is at total risk. We're not agreeing upon anything. The recommendation is that we allow the applicant to move forward with the process. At its own risk.
Yeah, and Mr. Chair, you added a discussion item, take action for the 18th to pending this discussion today. So that's
right
on the agenda.
Yeah,
already.
I just put it as a placeholder. I didn't know what really was going to come out of the commission, but we will then we'll move this back on the 18th, and I'll have to talk to. I don't know if I can put that on consent at this point.
We could move it to consent.
Yeah, let's just move it to consent and to accept the recommendations of FERC. And go ahead, Jason. I think.
Yeah, I just wanted to. So it's a 2-1, but it's not recommending commission approval of the conveyance of the air rights.
It's just authorizing the administration to do the administrative review so that the applications could be ready to be presented to the Historic Preservation Board and Planning Board.
Yeah, the Development Board applications.
I'll work with the city attorney to make sure I got
to
that.
To allow the Development Board applications to move forward at the applicant's risk.
Thank you.
Okay. And then let's just move it to consent, okay, on the 18th on this Wednesday.
Appreciate it. Thank you
so much. We got everything we need? Okay, great. Let's see. Commissioner Ariola, you got a couple other items. I don't know if you had any prior. I want to take Commissioner Fernandez's item on number 3 first, and then you've got 3 or 4, so maybe you can tell me what.
Yeah, mine'll go quick.
Okay, go ahead, Commissioner Fernandez. Take number 3, and then we're going to get to.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is kind of similar to the item that Commissioner Ariola had for the Venetian Causeway. But you know, different. We now have full ownership of Miami Beach Drive from 24th to 29th Street, and basically what I want to make sure is that we create a capital item so that we can start the process of envisioning a master plan for Miami Beach Drive. Miami Beach Drive, while we're doing improvements to it. It really hasn't changed. There hasn't been a significant re-envisioning and an upgrade to Miami Beach Drive, probably, if I had to guess, since the early 80s. Joe?
I would probably say that's correct.
Yeah, so since the early 80s, and there you are, right sandwiched to be between the One Hotel, the Addition, and all this beautiful residential in between. And since the 80s, we haven't really spent much in upgrading this area, and so what I want to make sure is that we start the process to create a capital item for envisioning a master plan. What should Miami Beach Drive look like? How long is it going to take? Do we need to hire a consultant? What is it that we need to do in order to do a master plan?
And thank you, Commissioner. Can you guys hear me? Yeah.
Yes.
Yes, and I did speak to David Martinez, my colleague in CIP, and this would be a CIP-led project because of the master planning element, and he is in agreement that this would be something that we would bring through the budget process to identify funding to be able to start get a consultant on board to do the master planning process.
Okay, and you can't bring a consultant on board until we put this on the capital budget?
Right. I mean, again, because we've got to allocate the funding for the consultant to be able to do the master planning.
How much does a consultant for this usually cost?
God.
Yeah.
I'm not an expert in master planning commission, but it should probably be north of $500,000.
Okay, so my motion is let's give the directive, let's request from the administration or ask the commission to take whatever actions we have to do to put this in the capital budget. Again, it's probably one of the few areas of the city that still has, you know, sidewalk from nearly 40 years ago, with little public investment other than doing some repairs and Band-Aids here and there. You know, it's an area of the city where we have a high density of residential, full-time residents living there, but sandwiched between, you know, areas also of high tourism. And so we should definitely be investing in this. And so that'd be my motion.
Yeah, I'm okay. So the motion is just to direct the administration to add this to the capital budget plan. And then, of course, we know that, I guess, in January you'll be starting for the next fiscal year or March, and then you'll have to decide what you want to recommend is determine the priority, right? Because we have more projects than we can fund right now. But we'll have a recommendation from VRC to send it back to commission to ask the commission to approve directing to put it on the capital budget plan. And then you all will have to come back and decide priorities or recommend priorities.
So if I can, Mr. Chair, we would show FERC recommending the administration to create a new capital project related to this area and it to be added to our five-year capital plan for, you know.
That's okay. Correct.
Yes, okay. Exactly. I can be brief on 17. I want to, this is on the Byron Carlisle. I actually had an item last month.
It's not on this agenda.
I know. I'm getting ready to withdraw it here, which will make you happy. But I have an item on the agenda last month that didn't get heard. You know, I usually have like four items, but I generally don't get my items heard. Because I think we should be moving forward with the Byron Carlisle, I'm going to discuss that in the commission meeting. Hopefully, my item will be called this month on the 18th. Also on 23, let me withdraw that as well. It's a Byron Carlisle as well. And item 24 was just an item I had picked up when I got elected. An annual update. So you can show 17, 23, and 24 withdrawn. Those are my items. We're getting close to Commissioner Ariola. You've got like item 4, 8, and 9. Tell me which one is your priority, and I'll call it up.
Let's do item 9.
Item 9. There we go. I'll let you tee that up.
Yeah, so discussion I wanted to have. I don't think the title captures what I'm thinking about, which says you're establishing a private or charter school in Miami Beach. To be clear, I'm not proposing that Miami Beach get into the business of education by any means. My thought here is, especially just in the past couple of years with so many people moving to Miami Beach, and if you follow it in the news or if you're a parent with a young one, our schools have just gotten super crowded, whether it's public, private, charter schools, whatever, harder and harder to get your kids into schools. A lot of families have moved to Miami Beach in recent years. We've had challenges with our public school system. So there's a bevy of reasons why I thought strategically for Miami Beach, if we could get another school or two in the city of Miami Beach, it would serve our residents and our families well, so they don't have to, go cross the bridge and go, fight traffic to drop their kids off at school. The idea I had was to inventory land and property that the city owns, and to the extent that there's consensus to do something, we would engage with the community, to put out an RFP for, a charter operation or some other educational organization to come in and run a school here in the city. We'd step out of the business of that, but what we would do is say, look, city has a lot of unused land, and if you want to open a charter school in Miami Beach, take a look at this land and give us a proposal. So that's really where I'm coming from, just to get the ball rolling, because there is a need for families here to have more choices so they don't have to drive, you know, off of Miami Beach to drop their kids off at school. I also think competition is a good thing. So that's where I'm coming from with this.
Hi, Leslie. Dr. Rosenfeld, welcome.
Good afternoon. I'm actually going to defer the beginning of the conversation so that we can discuss available property options.
Yeah, and I think that's where you started.
Yeah.
So maybe what we should do is look at what properties may be suitable for. I know that 4 years ago when I first came, it's like, God, 4 years has passed quickly,
mm-hmm.
huh?
Yep.
Property, you were engaged with a consultant, remember, to identify all the different properties in the city that we own and make some recommendations, and you did that. So
we did, and we identified properties that were viable for disposition, and we have since done.
You have done that. You've done that?
We have done that. We didn't dispose of any of those properties, but we still do have availability of some areas, primarily in the North Beach area is where our biggest properties are located.
And so how many properties have you identified?
If I may,
yes.
Chair, on page 276 of your binder,
there's a listing of all the listing. Viable locations.
They appear to be mostly west lots.
Yeah, the west lots. So
may I? Please.
Yeah, so, I mean, there's a good list. Thank you for doing this. And if I had to guess off the top of my head, this is what the list would have looked like in terms of lots of available land. To the extent there's an appetite from the, you know, incoming commission and mayor to explore this further, I think we should, you know, talk to residents and see what they think. I mean, I think we got a taste of it earlier this year regarding North Beach Elementary and some of the dissatisfaction of parents there at school that had to do really with the public school system, public school board. But even if everything was, you know, 100% copacetic and everyone was happy with our schools, we are fundamentally underserved when it comes to educational choices if you live in Miami Beach. I mean, if for some reason, we don't have a lot of private schools, but they fill up really quick. Our public schools, you can make your own judgment on those. We don't have a lot of choices, so you have to drive, across the bay, fighting traffic to drop off your kids. And I just think in terms of thinking about what our priority should be, what's the highest and best use of land, I think having another school here, particularly elementary, is something we should explore. And if we have underutilized land, a lot of times that's the gating factor for schools or business or anything. They can't get the land. And if we have land that could be used for a public purpose, such as an educational center, we might want to think about it. The west lots you have here, another potential when we build the aquatic center, to whatever extent the library site frees up. You already have a building there. You can maybe repurpose that as a school. I mean, I think there's a lot of options, but I think it's up to us to lead this conversation.
Commissioner Fernandez.
Thank you. It's certainly very supportive of the idea of having more education and schools in our community. It's what will keep families continuing to come to Miami Beach. And certainly not everyone wants to send their child to a public school. There's other needs in education that public schools might not necessarily be able to fulfill. Has there been a demand? I'm just thinking, we have a lot of private property in our city as well. Are we familiar? Has there been a demand from school operators wanting to operate in private property, and perhaps our code has not allowed it, or our process just gets in the way?
I was going to say that, Commissioner Fernandez. I meant to say that. Not just our own city-owned property, but to what extent could we use changing our zoning or creating other incentives. And by the way, this could be some future developer that's going to go do something. We could insist that part of the public benefit is that, you know, some of their new property would be used for a school.
Because I'd say this, what I would like us to do, because we have a limited inventory here. Mm-hmm. There's an unlimited inventory of private property out there in our city. And I feel more comfortable asking our administration, look at our land development regulations. And how can our land development regulations be more friendly towards educational institutions and educational uses? Because if we do that, and let's say, you know, maybe we can encourage them by doing that for a school to be interested in coming into Miami Beach and filling empty real estate that exists that might be private. Or perhaps they say, okay, well, Miami Beach has amended its code to facilitate educational institutions, but we're interested in this public piece of property. Well, they can submit an unsolicited proposal. But I'd rather go about it more holistically, not just focus on the public parcels. I think we just need to look at it more holistically. What is it that we need to do in terms of our land development regulations to be more welcoming of these educational uses?
Yeah, very good point. I mean, that might be the solution. I mean, I think, again, I'm not going to be here. So to whatever extent the future commission and mayor have as one of their legislative priorities to help attract another school to Miami Beach, then you can be very, very creative, particularly now with, you know, maybe new tools that are being given to us from Tallahassee in terms of things that you could do with development. You know, you look at Miami Children's Museum. They have a school in there, charter school in there. So you could, if there's a sizable development coming online, you know, we might think that, hey, set aside space for a school, and, you know, you can get additional FAR or other rights. But I do think strategically, Miami Beach becomes a much more desirable city to live in if we have more school offerings.
Yep. So does someone want to make a motion that we recommend the administration review the land development regulations to see what flexibility might be available? Is that?
Yeah.
I mean, I'll second that.
Yeah, even the aquatic center that's going to be built, we don't have tenants there yet. You know, what's to say that?
That's right.
You know, you can't make that a K through six.
Yeah,
or preschool. You know, whatever.
Potential amendments to the land development regulations, but also to the process. You know, process and fees, just to, you know, be able to facilitate that.
Yeah. I'll just say that, and I'm not going to be here as you won't. But the West Lots, you know, last year or year before, I saw a beautiful plan to expand the park.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a pretty amazing idea, right? I wouldn't be supportive of selling off all those for commercial development. And the other thing, I mean, you all know, because Commissioner Earle, you supported it, I wanted the three back lots of where the library site is to be a park forevermore. And then that leaves the front two parcels for either a school or, you know, affordable housing or something else. But, all right, so I think we've got – it'll be unanimous. And, Jason, I know you want to repeat it,
summarize.
So you got it right.
Yes.
Go ahead.
So it would be a recommendation to the commission to direct the administration to review our land use regulations to help facilitate educational facilities.
Yep.
Thank you.
And then we can close this item here, 9. And then, Commissioner Earle, you've got item 8. I mean, 8 and 4. So tell me what you want next.
I can do item 8 here. Again, this is going to be a recommendation to a future commission. Is, you know, the city attorney's office is one of those departments, and there are others, that for me is a bit of a black box when it comes to how much money gets funded there. I think it's one of those things where it gets rolled over every year, and then, you know, if money's needed, they get it. So it's kind of like, you know, I don't want to be disparaging, but it's kind of like the CIA secret ops. Like, nobody knows how much money and where it goes. you know, shamefully, this year I should have insisted what I did a year or two ago, which is do zero-based budgeting by department and get us into that habit. You know, kind of slipped me this year, but, you know, we should start in most departments zero-based budgeting. You start at zero and then build what you need. And I think for the city attorney's office, for example, you know, we should have everyone should know they'll spend $500,000 a year, $1 million a year in outside counsel to supplement, you know, the internal city attorney staff. Fine. If it goes for more than that, then they have to come back to the commission for an appropriation. Because I think we need the discipline of knowing every time we tell the city attorney, hey, go sue or, you know, go defend a lawsuit, if we don't know how much money we're spending, we end up making really bad business decisions. So I think we need the discipline of, hey, have an amount of money that we feel is a reasonable budget every year for the city attorney to spend on outside counsel, and if it ever goes above that threshold, they just got to come for an additional appropriation so that we keep our eye on the ball on what we're spending when we tell them just to go, you know, litigate everything.
Okay.
So that's my recommendation of how I would approach
it. Well, make a motion and...
So I would make a motion that the city attorney, together with our CFO and the commission, set an annual budget that the commission knows, and you have a not to exceed without coming formally for a request for additional funding.
Specifically related to outside counsel.
Yeah.
So let me ask our attorney.
Mr. Chair, yeah. I appreciate the comment that the secret ops is, you know, it's in the memo. So the numbers are in the memo. And if I understand your motion, which I appreciate, you know, I have tried to have, you know, sessions with individual commissioners in terms of all of our litigation, pending litigation, what we handle in-house, those cases that we need to farm out because we're not staffed for it or you know, there may be different reasons why outside counsel is required. As I understand your motion is you know, we have the budget that you've approved. Thank you. You did that last week. And you want to establish some parameters, some targets where if you're – because we don't spend in excess of the budget. If we're going to spend in excess of the budget, we have to come to you for a budget amendment. But before we even get there, if we're going to spend in excess of a certain amount within the budget, you want to see it and to understand what cases are driving that and where the expenditures are. I'll tell you you know, we've looked very carefully, and we've brought in more as much as we can in house, and we're still incurring expenses because on cases you have expert witnesses that are extremely expensive, and a lot of other related expenditures for large cases that have a lot of discovery and things of that nature. If I understand it, you know, we'll always have to come to you for any amounts in excess of the approved budget, which hasn't happened on my watch or I think under Raul as well. But within those budgets, you want additional parameters for notice to the commission and a better understanding and visibility into what's driving that.
Yeah, so by the way, I want to make clear, this is not a critique of you or your department. This is more of a critique of us as city commissioners, because I've seen it now for 8 years. You know, we just say willy-nilly, hey, go litigate it, go fight it. And, you know, as you know, I often come to you like, how much is it going to cost us? It's really to rein ourselves in as city commissioners to actually know what we're telling you to do and how much it's going to cost, because it's ultimately the taxpayers' money. And I know almost everyone here, if they were paying for it themselves, like if they were treating a matter like, oh, I got to fund it myself, you know, I have a dispute with a neighbor, I'm going to end up in litigation, you're going to think twice. But here it's like, since it's not our money, we just go sue or, you know, defend. And it's really, really expensive. And so, like, when we have, you know, a children's program coming for some, you know, some funding, $20,000, $10,000, and we have to say no, and then we spend, you know, per this memo, and I think it was more, $1.7 million for the 3401 Prairie Avenue litigation, which, you know, how I felt about that, you know, is ridiculous, right? And I just think that we, as commissioners and mayor, we lose visibility of it, and I can't bind anybody to it, but we need – to understand that when we tell you, hey, go sue or go defend, how much money we're actually asking you. Because it's different than most appropriations here where there is a set amount, there's a contract, it's a fixed amount, and we know what we're spending. Litigation just, we get the bill later and we're like, oh, shoot, had I known, you know, maybe we would have gone in a different direction. So I don't know. I mean, I think, you know, my ask of you is to work with future city commissioners and just say, look, this is going to cost $500,000 to litigate something that could be settled for $30,000. And I just think we need to be a little more disciplined about how we spend legal fees.
And I welcome that conversation. And one thing that has recently changed that is now effective as of October 1st is SB 170 is now in effect. And any, you know, ordinance or broad categories of ordinances that are adopted by the city commission could be challenged. And all that a plaintiff has to do is allege that it's arbitrary and unreasonable, and the ordinance would be suspended. We're going to be monitoring very closely what impact that has on our litigation needs. And so the conversation about costs, I think, is perfectly appropriate and good governance, and I welcome that.
Let me ask a question, and that is, when you put your budget together, obviously you know your staff costs, you know how many slots you have. Do you have a separate line item for outside counsel, or how does that get budgeted?
So we have the city attorney's office budget, which is largely the salaries for the 15 attorneys in the office, and the 9 assistants. And then I have a small line item for non-litigation outside counsel, elections counsel, some transactions counsel. What Commissioner Areola is referring to, it really resides in the risk management claims budget. It's a $26 million total budget, of which there is a line item for outside counsel expenditures of $2.381 million for FY24. And that number is actuarially determined because we self-insure for claims liability, for general liability, police liability, workers' comp, although we do have an excess insurance policy for workers' comp. And so all of that is actuarially determined each year, and they tell us how much to keep on hand. And so that's where the that line item in the risk management budget comes from. And then in addition to that, we maintain, based on what the actuary recommends, reserves for claims reserves. If you need to settle a case and it's not within the budget, or if you are incurring excess expenditures. And to that end, the city is it's a healthy reserve right now. I believe it's a $39.4 million claims reserve that sits outside the budget entirely.
Yeah, and that 39.4 is completely outside our regular reserve account, right, Jason?
Correct.
Okay. And the risk management budget, the $26 million, does that roll over from year to year? Like, if you don't spend part of that, does that roll? Or that's nothing that does not relate to the 39.4, right?
It's its own separate regulated fund. So if it had any unspent funds, it would be in its reserve. And as the city attorney mentioned, you know, it's reviewed by a third party as required by law by an actuarial third party. So that's how that item gets funded.
But if there's money left over,
it stays there.
It stays there. So I think Commissioner Areola is saying, look, why don't we take a look at the budget process for the legal department, especially given the change with SB 170, see what needs to be required. And if that's a motion, I'll second it. Okay. And I don't think it takes it. It does us any harm to just review the process. Yeah, so we'll show that done unanimous, okay?
Yeah, and I think I just had recorded the request to the attorney's office to, you know, brief future commissions, you know, on the financial implications of litigations.
And review their and budget review their process. Budget.
Okay.
Because now with SB 170, you might need to
bump it up, yeah.
Yeah, so, and with that, we're out of time. But before we leave, I just want to say what a great pleasure has been chairing this. I want to first thank you that You moved over to land use and allowed me to chair this and gave me this opportunity to really dig into the budget and learn it in the way that I have. And I really very much appreciate that you allowed me to do that. And Commissioner Fernandez, it's been a pleasure serving with you as well. Jason, thank you so much for everything. You have made the budget process easy for me. And almost a $1 billion budget. It'll be there in a couple of years. And to you, thank you, Raphael, for supporting me in this committee. And it's just been my great privilege to be able to chair the committee. Thank you.
Thank you for your hard work, both. I mean, you guys predate me here, but you've all worked as good stewards of the taxpayers' dollars, and you've always done it in a very conservative and respectful way of our taxpayers, those who we serve. So thank you both for your terms as chairs of this committee.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
And Mr. Chair, just if I could make one comment, because I've sat with this committee for 6 years now, and you know, we see on so many items every day. You know, the political landscape is what it is, and items go sideways. And this budget, the most important thing that the city adopts every year, the most important thing that you do every year, neither one of you during the time that you chair this committee ever let that go sideways. And so thank you for keeping us, keeping the eye on the prize. It's greatly appreciated.
Yeah, our pleasure. Our pleasure. Okay, with that, we will stand adjourned, and we'll see everybody Wednesday at the commission meeting. Thank you.